Gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. Glad you're here with us. We got a lot to talk about. We got experts coming on to talk about it with us. Of course, the Iran war continues in its many vicissitudes. David Pine will be joining me in the next hour. He is the president of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, an expert in nuclear technology, in particular EMP technology. We'll talk about technologically where we're at in this war, as it is unlike any war that has come before. Even the Ukraine-Russia war had a heavy amount of infantry battles in fields. This is the first, as far as I can tell, like full-fledged all-out war that is entirely people in bunkers pressing buttons and sending missiles at one another. A brave new form of warfare that we're still, I think, wrapping our minds around. We have a lot to discuss, and we'll take your phone calls in the third hour. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 10th of March, 2026. Trump advisors urge him to find Iran exit ramp, fearing political backlash. This is the story from Washington Post. President Trump said he was eyeing a quick end to the war in Iran, characterizing the military mission as mostly achieved. Some of President Trump's advisors urged an exit plan amid spiking oil prices and concerns about political backlash. President Trump has made conflicting statements on the war, and some administration officials said it was unlikely that the U.S. could easily withdraw from the conflict. Meanwhile, South Korea says they can deter threats if U.S. weapons are redeployed to the Middle East. Patriot missile defense systems in South Korea may be moved to the Middle East to make up for the multiple systems that have been outright destroyed by Iran. Concerns over regional defense gaps if U.S. assets such as Patriot missiles are diverted. North Korea may misinterpret U.S. weapons relocation, analysts warn. Yeah, that we care about some allies more than others. I would hope that message is becoming clear. South Korea can deter any threats from North Korea, even if Washington redeploys weapons stationed in the country, President Lee Jae-myung said on Tuesday after reports of a U.S. missile defense system were being sent to the Middle East. Reports on shifting key U.S. military assets have sparked concern in Asia about the potential gaps in regional defenses if Washington diverts ships and missiles used to deter military flexing by China and North Korea to other theaters to the Middle East to deal with a very successful string of Iranian attacks. So just keep that in mind, all right? Because you're going to hear a lot of confusing things today about how we're doing amazing and we're on the march and Iran is completely collapsed and can't do anything. But also we might be moving THAAD batteries from South Korea to the Middle East. These two things are obviously contradictory because one of them is true and one of them is a lie. Is this happening right now, or is this from... If this is live, let's go to this. This is General Kane outlining Operation Epic Fury objectives. Tell you what, we'll finish the Daily Dispatch. We'll do a 90-second break, and then I'd like to go to that if that's live or if we can back it up. Meanwhile, U.S. asks Israel to halt strikes on Iran's energy infrastructure. The Trump administration asked Israel on Monday to not carry out any further strikes on energy facilities in Iran, particularly oil infrastructure, according to three sources familiar with the matter. The U.S. request marks the first time the Trump administration has reined in Israel since the two countries launched their joint operation against Iran 10 days ago. The Israeli strikes blanketed Tehran, a city of 10 million, in toxic black smoke and acid rain, raising urgent health warnings for ordinary Iranians. The U.S. messages were conveyed to a senior political level, and to IDF Chief of Staff Eyal Zamir, an Israeli official said. Again, we'll return to that in just a little bit. But I don't think this is going to end anytime soon. Iran vows eye for an eye, not seeking a ceasefire amid reports of 150 U.S. troops wounded so far. So, yes, it has been admitted that nearly 150 troops from the U.S. have been wounded so far, and Iran basically is still rejecting any calls for a ceasefire, as again, they are seeking to fully change the situation in an irreversible way. Finally, this story, CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document with potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. Yeah, do you know how much money cancer makes?
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big Pentagon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have foundation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore, but the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it is, what is it now, day 10 of the war. And things are not any less absurd today than they were yesterday. More so, in fact, because we have now gone from two-day war, 48-hour operation to, I mean, you know the cycle. But at this point, Trump's like, and we're almost done. And we're about to declare victory. So, all right, whatever. Just, okay, good. Declare victory. I think we should declare victory and leave the Middle East forever. Concerns over U.S. weapons stockpiles grow as Iran war strains missile defense systems. U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran have raised concerns among Democrats and others about diminishing American stockpiles of certain weapons, illustrating a longstanding production problem that some experts say could present challenges if another conflict emerges. The ongoing U.S. and military campaign against Iran has intensified these concerns because we are, well, I think we used 4 years worth of Patriot missiles in the first 4 days, something along those lines. However, as of yet, I don't know. I'm kind of turning around on this whole war thing. Not really. Not really in any way that's significant at all. But like so far, the outcome has been total devastation of American military bases overseas, which I don't like anyway. Bombing Tel Aviv, which is sad if it kills innocent people, but it's not exactly like they don't deserve it to some degree after 2 years of Gaza and now Lebanon and Syria and everywhere else. So I don't know. I mean, so far it seems like Iran is absolutely kicking butt across the board. And by the way, keeps coming out making statements saying, we're not at war with the American people. We're trying to free you from the Zionist control. And it's like, all right, cool. I'm kind of down with that. I don't know. Everything's gone topsy-turvy. But of course, as was obvious to anybody paying attention, the casualty numbers have been massively undercounted. Let's go to clip number 23 here. This is Caroline Levitt earlier today talking about servicemen that were wounded in the Middle East. Let's watch.
Reuters has reported that about 150 U.S. Service members have been injured so far. Can you confirm that number and elaborate on that?
I can't confirm the exact number. I know it's within that ballpark, but I would defer you to the Pentagon for a specific number of wounded or injured thus far.
And then second.
So as many as 150 U.S. troops wounded in Iran war, sources say this according to Reuters, as many as 150 troops have been wounded in the Iran war. Two sources familiar with the matter told Reuters the figure has not been previously reported and is far higher than the Pentagon's public disclosed figure of 8 seriously wounded U.S. forces. In a statement after Reuters published its report, the Pentagon estimated the figure to be approximately 140 wounded and said the vast majority of them were minor. Chief Pentagon spokesperson Sean Parnell said 108 of the wounded service members had already returned to duty. But of course, we've already shown you, and there's more examples now of servicemen in Kuwait and other places with U.S. bases dying from mysterious medical emergencies that are ill-defined and probably a lie. Dan Kane has been giving a presentation about the Iran war. We're going to go to that. We backed it up about 20 minutes at the very beginning, see if we can get the key information here. Let's go ahead and go to the press conference with Dan Kane, the military chief. PXF introducing him.
Well, to our fellow Americans, brave warriors, and steadfast allies, good morning. You know, as someone who led troops, led soldiers in the streets of Baghdad and Samarra, Iraq, and who trained counterinsurgents in Kabul, Afghanistan, and who still carries the weight of brothers lost to Iranian terrorist proxies, many backed by the same Iranian regime we're confronting now. This fight, Operation Epic Fury, it hits home. Our generation understands this fight. For 47 years, these barbaric savages in the Iranian regime have murdered our brothers in arms, my guys, your guys, our guys, through their terrorist proxies and cowardly attacks. Now they race toward a nuclear bomb to hold the world hostage. The Iranians have targeted and killed thousands of my American brothers. That race to a nuclear bomb, President Trump will never allow it. Not now, not ever, not on our watch. The mullahs are desperate and scrambling. Like the terrorist cowards they are, they fire missiles from schools and hospitals, deliberately targeting innocents, because they know their military is being systematically degraded and annihilated. Iran's neighbors, and in some cases, former allies in the Gulf, they've abandoned them. And their proxies, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and Hamas, either broken, ineffective, or on the sidelines. Iran stands alone, and they are badly losing. On day 10 of Operation Epic Fury, we are winning with an overwhelming and unrelenting focus on our objectives, which are the same as the day I gave my first briefing here on Operation Epic Fury. They're straightforward, and we are executing them with ruthless precision. One, destroy their missile stockpiles, their missile launchers, and their defense industrial base. Missiles and their ability to make them. Two, destroy their navy. And three, permanently deny Iran nuclear weapons forever. It's a laser-focused, maximum authority mission delivered with overwhelming and unrelenting precision. No hesitation, no half measures. As President Trump declared yesterday, we're crushing the enemy in an overwhelming display of technical skill and military force. We will not relent until the enemy is totally and decisively defeated. But we do so. We do so on our timeline and at our choosing. For example, today will be yet again our most intense day of strikes inside Iran. The most fighters, the most bombers, the most strikes. Intelligence more refined and better than ever. So that's on one hand. On the other hand, the last 24 hours have seen Iran fire the lowest number of missiles they've been capable of firing yet. Just the bifurcation, just the trend lines that we talked about on our first briefing. You see, this is not 2003. This is not endless nation building under those types of quagmires we saw under Bush or Obama. It's not even close. Our generation of soldier will not let that happen again, and nor will this president, who very clearly ran against those kinds of never-ending, nebulously scoped missions. Those days are dead. Instead, we're winning decisively with brutal efficiency, total air dominance, and an unbreakable will to accomplish the president's objectives on our timeline. We stay locked on the target because here at the Department of War, that's our job. Now, the chairman and I, having just returned from Dover last night, our troops and their families, and the enormous sacrifice that they make is certainly heavy on my mind. So I'll close with scripture, drawing strength from Psalm 144. Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. He is my loving God and my fortress, my stronghold and my deliverer, my shield, in whom I take refuge. May the Lord grant unyielding strength and refuge to our warriors, unbreakable protection to them in our homeland, and total victory over those who seek to harm them. And amen. God bless our troops and this mission. Mr. Chairman, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and good morning, everyone.
We'll go back to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dan Cain, here in just a second. Just want to note a few things about Hegseth's speech. Typical of what you'd expect, I guess, of a Secretary of War. However, took down some notes. I was just bullet pointing each thing he said. And some of these things are, like, provably untrue. Others are just blanket statements that you can't even try to claim are true. I mean, start off by saying, again, the classic refrain we've been hearing is that Iran and their proxies have killed thousands and thousands of Americans. I would love for them to explain what that means. What does that mean? Who and when and why? Like, what are you talking about? Can you point to any of the thousand people, perhaps? I mean, best case scenario, we're talking the mid-80s truck bomb against American soldiers being planted there. Like, you know, again, what are we talking about? If we're predicating a war on this, I would like a little bit more specificity than Iran has killed thousands of Americans at some point in the past. It's not actually a valid cause of anything, a war or a military action. It's just crazy. Racing to a nuclear bomb. They're racing towards a nuclear bomb. They are running flat out, and we have to trip them. I think that's debatable. I think it's debatable whether what is happening right now is doing anything other than solidifying forever their desire for a nuclear weapon, knowing that anything short of a nuclear weapon leaves you vulnerable. So I don't know if it's true. I'm sick of this war being predicated on, like, metaphors. They're racing towards a nuclear bomb. What does that mean? Are they actually trying to develop a nuclear bomb? And if so, like, what does that mean? And why is this the only path to take? These aren't reasons for war. They just aren't. But they're racing. They're racing towards a nuclear bomb. And then, of course, he tries to sort of cover his butt in a not very subtle way. They're firing missiles from schools, as if that's the reason why we bombed an elementary school. And the whole bombing the elementary school saga is an interesting one. Basically, on the first day of bombing, an elementary school was directly targeted, and it was not a valid military site. However, it was the place where a lot of the IRGC commanders sent their children. So we killed a bunch of children of our enemies on the first day. There was sort of some back and forth about who exactly launched that attack. But then video footage of the attack came out, and it was clearly a American Tomahawk missile that struck the school. So now America is sort of taking the blame for that strike. But you have people very close to the administration and with high up knowledge, people like Laura Ingraham, who keeps insisting that the full investigation has to come out. And basically the speculation is that this school was targeted either with information from the Israelis, meaning that, you know, it was an American bomb, but with Israeli intelligence telling us to strike there, or it was Claude and AI telling us to strike the school, either one of which would be a gigantic scandal, which would sort of demand, you know, institutional changes in our warfighting process. So while it was an American missile, there's still a lot of questions about why that missile was sent to that school, whether it was on purpose or an accident, whether it was bad intelligence or a bad decision by AI. Regardless, we're still waiting answers on that hand. But obviously when Pete Hegseth says they're launching missiles from schools, for one thing, I don't believe him in the slightest. We've seen videos of Iranian missiles coming literally from just the sand in the desert. You know, at least you have an argument to make when it comes to Gaza, when it's such a cramped place and you have so many tunnels, you know, like a labyrinth underneath the entire city. You could at least make the argument that Hamas, whether out of strategy or necessity, probably did have some stuff under some schools at some point. Not that that makes them then a valid target, but to then make that same claim with Iran, it just doesn't make any sense. But none of this makes any sense. He insists that we are winning, which is a little strange because we keep asking for talks to Iran and Iran keeps rebuffing us, which is not the, you know, paradigm that would occur if in fact we were winning. And actually, before I move on, I want to go to a video here of an Israeli, actually. Let's go to clip 12 here, because this is Glenn Greenwald questioning a military commander of Israel, just on the question of, since Pete Hegseth brought it up and said, you know, Iran is shooting schools out of, or shooting missiles out of schools. Again, I'd love to see some evidence of that, or even some logic that means that that would make sense for them to do. That's just crazy, but okay, that's fine. I think it's all pure projection. I think the whole time the claim of using human shields has been projection. Let's go to clip 12 now.
It is astounding to me that somebody like Mike Pence or so many other people who lied to the public continuously, led our country into disastrous wars one after the next, are now just speaking as though none of it ever happened. It would be like as if a journalist, I publish 8 or 9 different fraudulent stories with fake quotes and fake sources, and then the next day I woke up and said, oh, I know I did those things in the past, but I think I should still have credibility for you to listen to my reporting today, even though I did all of that. The other point I want to make is, I want to ask Jonathan, because I mean, honestly, it is very, very difficult, I have to confess, not just for me, but for the world, as the polls show, to listen to an Israeli official in an Israeli accent give lectures on the need to have compassion for civilians after everything we just watched Israel do, vaporizing tens of thousands of people in Gaza, all throughout the Middle East, attacking countries. But since he is here, I do want to ask him, Jonathan, there's a lot of reports in mainstream Western press about how the IDF has built its primary military and intelligence structures, not just within key residential areas in Tel Aviv, but also underneath. Is it true that the IDF has built key military and intelligence targets within residential areas of Tel Aviv and beneath residential targets in Tel Aviv, the way that the Western media has continuously reported? Is that actually true?
Yeah, I can give a relatively short and plain answer to it. Surprising question. I've read some of your reporting and you seem like an informed guy. Yes, the IDF headquarters, referred to as the Kiryah, is indeed located in Tel Aviv. It is surrounded by civilian buildings and inside the headquarter, not underneath civilians, but underneath the headquarter itself, is a bunker, which is not a revolutionary concept of militaries. And that bunker is a few stories below ground. Its name is indeed the Zion Citadel. And that is where some of the Israeli officers, generals conduct military operations from. I suppose some of the strikes, if not all of the strikes that are ongoing in Iran today, are managed from there.
So, again, it's like, so you're using human, so what you're saying is that you're using human shields and that everybody above you or around you is therefore a valid military target and you have nothing to complain about. You probably shouldn't have started this precedent. Like you, and even now, it's actually funny on X, you'll have Mossad, like literal Mossad, accounts saying, you know, this is against international law. And then under it will be a community note being like, here's the 5 times that this account has scoffed at and, you know, insulted the very concept of international law. Because for the past 2 years, you've been making very, you know, compelling arguments against the need to care about the civilians around where you're murdering people. So Hegseth goes on to say the proxies are broken, which is also not true, considering the fact that there's a million Israelis right now in shelters in the north of their country as Hezbollah mounts successful raid after successful raid into the Israeli population. They are, however, killing, priests in Catholic churches that refuse to leave. So that's not going well for them. He says they've destroyed their missiles again. Then what was hitting Tel Aviv last night? That's a little confusing. He wants to deny their nuclear weapons. And the sort of scary thing is, he's like, this is different than the other wars because we have hard and fast and specific, like, goals. And it's like, do you not remember Iraq or Afghanistan? No, there were also very easy to accomplish and specific goals to start. Like, he's talking as if in 2003, you had a bunch of neocons going, we are going to get into Iraq and for whatever reason and stay there. We're creating a boondoggle quagmire and we will be there forever. No, they sold the Iraq war with literally exactly the same lies that they're selling the Iran war. It's just shocking. It's just like, yeah, it's different this time because we are going to be hyper-focused on their weapons of mass destruction and leaving them a chaotic state. Like, in a weird way, the Iran war is the war that has aims that are forever, right? The Iran war's actual ultimate aims, according to Israel and America, sort of aligned with what Pete Hegseth, it's to leave Iraq as a totally broken, functionless quagmire. Like, that's the goal. That's actually their goal. Now, he says that it's destroy the missiles, destroy the Navy, destroy the nuclear weapons, but the war started out by bombing all of the leadership to death. So, like, how does that achieve these goals? Like, this is the thing. If these are the goals, then you probably would have gone after these things first. But first you destroyed all of the civilian leadership, and then you destroyed all the civilian structure, and you're bombing hospitals and elementary schools and police stations in Iran to create a conflict that will last forever. So not only is he wrong about how the Iraq war was sold, actually, if any sort of war is being waged here with sort of ill-defined and possibly infinite goals, it's the Iran war. It's just completely absurd. And then from Infowars.com, Iran says they will decide when the war is over, not the U.S. On Tuesday, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps responded to President Trump's announcement that the Iran war is complete by saying that Iran will decide when the war is over, not Washington. Trump said, quote, I think the war is very complete, pretty much. They have no Navy, no communications, no Air Force. If you look, they've got nothing left. There's nothing left in a military sense. Iran responds saying it is we who will determine the end of the war. The equations and future status of the region are now in the hands of the armed forces. American forces will not end the war. That seems to be the situation. I'm not sure what leverage we would have to end the war if we wanted to. The initiative is not on our side. It's on their side. And all we can do is hope to continue to degrade their missile launching capabilities. But at this point, it's a war of attrition, and they already have a massive leg up, and that's before we even get into boots on the ground, which does look like it's happening just like we told you that it would. And we'll show you those clips on the other side. Senator Blumenthal, Democrats, coming out and speaking out against this. We'll show you clips from Lindsey Graham yesterday, just paving the way for a radical leftist to take over his Senate seat. Thank you, Lindsey Graham. Israel thanks you. We'll be right back.
We've got to get to a point where we are self-sufficient again, Texas. And when it comes to health, also food, our food needs to be clean, number one. It just needs to be clean. And
Florida has pointed out, put that back on screen, all these major brands have got, like, you know, hundreds of times the glyphosate you should have.
Glyphosate.
Absolutely. Well, your doctor tells us what that does.
Oh, this is going to change your brain. This is going to set you up.
It erases your blood-brain barrier.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really an accelerant or an adjuvant. Absolutely. Everything in there. Explain that.
It destroys the blood-brain barrier. So that's a protective thing that happens between the cerebral spinal fluid and your fluids inside the brain and the things that attack it from the outside. Once that barrier is depleted, then it's subject to all kinds of heavy metals, things that get sprayed from the sky, right? Barium, aluminum, all these things that it protects you from. why methylene blue works. It does. It counters that. It's.
Let me ask you that. 45 minutes in, you feeling, Doc?
Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Be honest, though. You got your own special brand. Is this good or
what? No, this is the same effect I'm getting, but it feels right. Yeah, it feels right. Yeah, it's a little easier to take. Yeah.
By easier, what do you mean compared
just
to?
Just the way it feels, you know, just going down, drinking it. But it's, yeah, it's.
So this one tastes better, but it's as good as the one your doctor gave.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, so your doctor must have a good one.
We'll see. We'll go down the road a little ways. I'll text you.
Guys, get him a couple of bottles of this. I need Doc Chambers endorsing this.
I'm not getting it for free, but I'll definitely help.
No, you're getting it down. Come on. Free your butt. It's amazing.
Hey, this is Doc Chambers here. I'm out in the field right now. Day off from the campaign trail doing some work. I got things to catch up on, so it's called a refit day. But I'm getting refit with Alex Jones' methylene blue. It's pretty good. I got to say, I've been using it on the road since we left the studios. And I've been taking it for a while. I had a traumatic brain injury in Iraq in 2004. There's been a lot of studies out there that show that with post-dementia patients and TBI patients, it's been used for years. It's just not very well known with regard to demyelination, what it can do to improve your cognition. So that's your brain. Your brain housing these stuff. Hey, thanks, Alex. Appreciate you. We're going to stay on.
Powered by Methylene Blue, Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexshowstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexShowStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. Talking about the Iran war, we'll be joined by David Pine. He is an expert on nuclear warfare. He'll be joining us in the second hour, and then we'll take your calls in the third hour. I want to go now to clip number 21. This is by a ex-user called Vincent Scott. And I'll just tell you right now, I don't agree with his interpretation or analysis here. But I think it's worth bringing you because it's, so far as I've found, the most lucid explanation of how this Iran war can be viewed from a strategic point of view as a good or necessary thing. And I don't agree with it. I'll explain why on the other side. But I want to show this video as he could have a point. You know, there could be aspects to this that are legitimate. But I also feel like there's this mindset that I keep seeing everywhere that I'm having trouble defining. And it's just sort of an autistic way of looking at the world, actually, now that I think about it, where like you completely remove the humanity or morality of what's happening and you just look at it kind of like you're a robot. And it's combined with a sort of de facto absolute trust in the establishment. And I'll explain kind of what I mean. And there's also an aspect of an inability to foresee second order effects. And I think this mindset is what's gotten us into a lot of trouble these days, because you have a lot of people making decisions about war and peace and, you know, depopulation and ethnic cleansing, and it's being treated as if it's very clinical and almost like a computer program. Just, we'll move this population over here, and it strips the people there of their humanity, and it lacks the understanding that, like, people aren't just going to let you do that, and they're going to be mad at you, and there's going to be backlash to that. And even if you succeed in forcing what you want to happen, you will have just created a simmering, you know, pot of vengeance just waiting for you. So I want to show this video again to highlight what I think is a very pernicious mindset in the modern world of very smart people kind of being very casually evil about things. Let's watch.
What I tell you? So in the lead up to all of this, remember I said Trump built consensus. That's why no one opposed going into Iran meaningfully and cut deals. So Putin was just talking with Trump today about solutions to Iran. They already know what they're going to do. And at the same time, he's saying he's going to cut off energy to Europe. But he still needs to sell and they still need to buy. So what's the play here? Well, clearly, Putin is going to send his energy down the Caucasus over the Trump-brokered Armenian-Azerbaijan Trump highway. That means we got interest there through the Gulf of Arabia out to the Indian Ocean to Asia. You know, they got markets too, and, you know, going from Arctic and Pacific down to Asia, but this is a little bit more direct route. So Russia's going to be taken care of. And people are saying, oh, this is a big bad thing against China. No, it's not either, because China want to do the Belt and Road through Iran up to Turkey into the Europe. But who can you talk to in the Iranian leadership? No one knows. So everyone was just done dealing with these people. You can't talk to them. They're instability. They're a problem. So now it's getting solved. Trump's underwriting all the shipping that's going through the Strait of Hormuz, cutting out London. You know, and the ships there are just turning off the transponders and going through anyway. We got total air and naval superiority throughout it all. And like I said, all these other countries have their strategic reserves. And one whiff of that being dumped out, oil fucking crashed. Trump has a plan for everything. Okay, everything's been accounted for in the lead up to this and throughout it. You know, AI is targeting all of these people. Like, it's scanning real time all of Iran for the launchers. It doesn't matter how many missiles they got. They can't launch them anymore. So clearly these are the plays. Get them back up to stable production, just like with Venezuela. Venezuela, far better production now. And energy crises are going to crash after this. We're going to have more resources out onto market, more ways and trade lanes of goods moving through the Mid-Asian corridor, which is good for all of humanity to drop the cost of living. Now, getting Maduro out, excellent, because now, A, Venezuela's back to production, all that, but he's singing like canary about the politicians that were taking payoffs, taking the illegal immigrants, not to mention the stealing of the elections. And Trump's putting the pressure on to get SAVAK first done to secure the elections, because if you think about it, it makes sense. If you get the SAVAK done first, that means now there are electoral consequences to these senators and congressmen. So therefore, they have to negotiate. Because if there's no electoral consequence, there's no reason to make a deal for anything. So you get SAVE Act done first, and then Clarity Act, and then, you know, we're off to the races. So everything's well in hand. All these panicky motherfuckers out there, they actually don't know anything. Okay? They actually don't. Anytime I do this, it's like 10, 15 hours before I even feel of studying, before I feel confident to even talk, you know? This is how I run it, man. Like, shoestring for my fucking couch. So, grade it yourself, man. I'll have the link below. And if you find it's correct, which it is, subscribe up, bro. Because I'm here giving you the fucking plays. Well in advance. And you don't have to fucking lose sleep over any of this shit, all right? I do that for you.
I love the condescending, these condescending people. Okay. So that, I feel like that's the type of content that people can watch and it soothes their nerves, right? They see everything going on. They're like, what is this? It seems like a bad idea. Why is this happening? Like, what's going on? And then you have this guy going, don't worry about it. This is all perfect and fine and well in hand. But actually think about what he said. The big benefits he touted were that we'd be able to move resources better through a Central Asian corridor, and that will make prices go down across the world. It's these types of like completely, intemporal, like vague, homologous, just sort of like, yeah, eventually, you know, we need more resources to go through here. That way things will be cheaper. And it's like, okay, you let me know when things get cheaper. You let me know when anything gets cheaper ever. And was starting a war with Iran and creating a toxic black cloud poisoning 10 million people, was that worth a moderate rise in consumer goods traveling through the Middle East? Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? This is like, he's talking about war in which already thousands of people have died. Hundreds of American soldiers have paid the price. And he's like, it's fine because actually, I guess Trump is working with China. Was the insinuation there that China wanted to go through wanted the Belt and Road to go through Iran, but Iran was difficult to work with. Therefore, you have to slaughter their people in air raids and remove them so you can work with China better to make the Belt and Road. Like, what is the insinuation there? Again, when you just hear him say it, it sounds very like intelligent and well reasoned, but if you actually parse what he's actually saying, it genuinely doesn't make any sense. What is the benefit to this? And it's like, yeah, these countries have stockpiles. It's like, well, first of all, Biden drained our strategic reserve severely. We can show you graphs that show that. They look like line illustrations of cliffs. And that was during COVID. We don't exactly have infinite reserves, but also that's the type of phrase that's like meant to express like they're the ones that understand, that they're in control, and you're just panicking because you don't get how things are working. But it's like, no, you shouldn't want to use your reserves. How is that a good thing? It's like saying, hey, you're doing this thing that's costing me a ton of money, and you're like, yeah, but you have savings. Like, yeah, but we're not supposed to spend that. We're still spending it, and for what is the question? And how would that not, if you're spending your reserves, you're going to have to fill up those reserves. Like, it's going to have a massive increase in prices of everything because oil affects the price of everything. So if this whole thing is all just to make it a little bit easier to ship resources, even though we were shipping resources fine prior to this, like what is the logic here? What are we talking about? Before the Iran war, was there a big issue about shipping things through the Mediterranean, through the Strait of Hormuz? Was there? No, there wasn't. Okay. So that wasn't a problem that we were solving, but now it'll be easier. Once we do the war, eventually we'll get back to a point like we were just before the war. Therefore, the war is justified. What? Okay, that just genuinely doesn't make any sense. He also just says, like, Trump built consensus around this, which is why there was no opposition. Like, I don't think that's true either. I don't think the Gulf countries are very happy about how things are going. And consensus with who? Who are you talking about? With Congress? That wasn't Trump doing that. That was decade upon decade of AIPAC infiltration that guaranteed Congress would be on board and that there wouldn't be a lot of resistance there. Like, just again, what is he talking about? What are we doing here? What is this? We'll have a little, he says literally, quote, we'll have a little more direct route to ship goods. It'll be a little bit more direct. Okay. So just spend 4 years of our Patriot missiles, get Tel Aviv bombed to smithereens and kill the Pope of Shiite Islam, because, you know, that way we can shave off a good, you know, quarter of an hour on our shipping, our transit. And then that cost will come tumbling down to the consumer, I'm sure. Like, what are we talking about? This is what this is all for. This is why this is a good thing. And it's this weird, like, his interpretation is this weird thing where he's like, no, this isn't even about China. China's going to do fine out of this. Like, okay, the one thing that actually made this seem like it was kind of worth it was that it was maybe a part of a wider global strategy of dismantling China's influence network. But this guy's like, nah, don't worry about that. China didn't like Iran. This is for China. It's like, okay. And you're selling this to the American people? That's what you're trying to do here? I mean, we keep going and going, but like literally all of it. And, you know, he's talking about something about AI targeting. I can't remember what his comment was about that, but that this was, oh, cause he was like, anywhere Iran fires, you know, AI is scanning constantly and identifies it. But it's like, this is why I said it's kind of autistic. It's kind of this like video game mindset. Like it's disconnected with the real world. Do you really think that the U.S. is constantly scanning every square foot of Iran and that they have the ability to instantly strike anywhere that a missile launcher emerges? And do you think the Iranians didn't expect this, didn't think about this, and have no contingency plans? How about you have hundreds of missile launch sites that you use once, and then if they're destroyed, it doesn't matter. And once the missile launches, blowing up that site doesn't stop the missile that's already been launched. They also have mobile missile launchers with trucks that fire the missile and then leave. So what are you doing there? I mean, it's like it sounds nice, right? Oh, we're scanning with AI, and whenever a missile pops up, we destroy that site. Yeah, after like a couple hours, like once you scramble the jets there and get the bombing sorties and the Iranians have time to pack everything up and leave or disappear into the tunnel and go to a different entrance somewhere else to fire more missiles. And what do you mean they aren't firing? What do you mean they can't fire missiles? They are literally firing missiles. What are you talking about? They're hitting Tel Aviv on a pretty regular basis. And the videos are pretty astonishing. And like they're hitting radar arrays directly. What are we talking about here? What is this? I understand, like I'm a pro at identifying and counteracting normal propaganda where the truth is twisted or lies are seeded in between truths. But this is just abject lies from everybody on every side. So it's just like, it's hard to even confront because they just assert things. And the only way to combat is just assert right back that they're wrong. I guess that's what we have to do when there's like Iran's missiles, like Iran can't launch missiles anymore. The only response I have is like, well, yes, they can. So, okay. You know, one of us has video of the thing happening. So I guess the audience can choose who to believe in this case. But when it comes to AI targeting, how confident are we in this? Anthropic AI and Claude has been through some drama with the U.S. recently. Now, I think that has more to do with the fact that they're just not on board with the robotic killing machines and the, you know, New World Order paradigm that, you know, Palantir is central to. So I think they're just being boxed out of defense contracts, you know, purely for ideological reasons, which is sort of the acknowledged thing that's happening. But Robert Wright wrote a expose on this saying, Anthropic's Claude helped select hundreds of targets for the opening wave of Iran strikes. There's a good chance that one of them was the elementary school where more than 100 girls died. And as a segment from this article, it says, all of which brings us back to Anthropic, whose Claude model is integrated into Maven, a software that's operated by Palantir and used by the Pentagon to identify targets. The Washington Post reports that, quote, as planning for a potential strike in Iran was underway, Maven, powered by Claude, suggested hundreds of targets, issued precise location coordinates, and prioritized those targets according to importance. Given that the Iranian elementary school was hit on the first day of the war, it seems fairly likely that Claude played a role in the selection of that target and thus in the death of more than 100 young girls, many times more kids than were killed in the worst American school shooting. And of course, they're rolling this out. And actually, just yesterday, a OpenAI engineer quit because she said she would not be involved as an engineer in a program that was designing and is deploying autonomous killing machines that have the ability to take human life without any oversight or insight from an actual human. So they are building that. They are doing that right now. And it's just another horror from all of this war. It's just another, you know, outcome of this war that I would put firmly on the negative column. And the pro column is still glaringly absent for reasons why we would go to this war. Now, he does talk about the SAVE Act. And again, it's this type of thing where it's like, guys, this is all in hand. Trump has this all. You got to get the SAVE Act first, because then there will be electoral consequences for the people opposing him. And it's like, we are over a year into the first, into his second term, first year of his second term. The SAVE Act should have been done last summer. How can you say this is all in hand when the prerequisite to do everything else, when the first thing you need to get done hasn't been done in over a year and doesn't look like it's close to being done? Not if Senator Thune has anything to say about it, and he's the guy with the gavel. So Senator Thune, by the way, is doing the same thing that all these groups do, which, again, we need a description for. This is such a popular strategy. It's pure projection on one hand, but there's got to be, it's just discrediting something on the basis that your enemy also likes that thing. I think you'll see what I mean. I got a couple examples from Senator Thune. John Thune suspects that influencers pushing the Save America Act are, quote, paid influencers, despite voter ID having massive support among GOP voters and majority approval across all voters. Thune has been accused of stalling to avoid passing voter ID. So voter ID is just overwhelmingly popular, and obviously so. Voter ID is like 95% of Republicans want it and 75% of Democrats want it. And yet, Senator Thune, without any reason, without any basis for believing so, just asserts these are all paid influencers. Why? Because he wants them to be, because he can't actually, you know, combat or discredit the arguments that people are making in favor of the SAVE Act. So he just has to say, it's like saying they're all crazy, right? Yeah, they're all insane. You don't have to actually address their concerns. They're all paid influencers. Who is paying them? Who are these, you know, mysterious NGOs? Who are these big money, dark money groups that are paying for America to be more sovereign and safer and for our electoral process to be secured? I'd like to meet them. I'd like to be paid by them, I guess, because we're doing this for free because we believe in this, Senator Thune. But this is the strategy du jour. This is what everybody is constantly doing. And in some cases, I mean, well, it's a couple things. For one thing, I think it's boomers learning that they can use this excuse and that it's extremely convenient. Oh, everybody online is against you. Oh, every time you tweet anything, everybody responds negatively. Just say they're paid influencers. Then not only do you not have to like pay attention to them, you don't even have to like internally pay attention to what they're saying. You can just discredit and dismiss them as paid influencers. So I think they just sort of learned about this and are like, great, that's a great excuse to ignore my constituents. But I also think obviously they're all being paid. Obviously there's a lot of money going into a lot of interests and directing the way people talk about stuff. It ain't in favor of the SAVE Act. And you need some level of discrimination to be able to tell what is a paid influence and what isn't. One hint that something might be, you know, a paid influence is when it's publicly acknowledged that they pay for influence, like how Israel has announced the $7,000 reward for people talking positively about it, or the fact that they routinely bring over huge groups of people, including 1,000 evangelical pastors, to deliberately pay them to spread their message. It's like there are very obvious paid campaigns, and then there are obviously real campaigns. It should not be that hard. In fact, it's not that hard to tell the difference. And you should be very suspicious of people who are trying to discredit real concerns by claiming that they're paid. This one might be the most brazen attempt to do this. I can't even believe that they're going for this, since it's so just patently, like nakedly absurd. From Washington Post, okay, today. The Epstein files are helping pro-Iranian propaganda spread. They're actually saying that the Epstein files are Iranian propaganda. The Epstein files about the Israeli sex trafficker compiled by the American FBI, released by the American Department of Justice under demands by the American Congress. That was an Iranian trick you're falling for if you care about it. It's a trick. Now, he, you know, starts off by talking about something that is fake, which is like a AI, you know, video of Trump with little kids. The video is fake, disinformation researchers say. And the account, but the account is a part of a pro-Iran propaganda network that found viral success by tapping into the conspiracy theory that Trump attacked Iran to distract the public from the Epstein files. This is the thing. Nobody needed to tell anybody that he's attacking Iran from the Epstein files. It's abundantly clear the overwhelming similarities, the connections between the Epstein files and the Iran war, the influence of Israel and the pointless wars overseas, the stranglehold Israel seems to have over specifically our administration, who went absolutely bananas when Epstein was brought up, even though they'd campaigned on that. To act like it was an Iranian propaganda campaign that made people connect Epstein to the current Israel war is like an insult to your intelligence. And this is Washington Post. Do you understand how absurd all of this is? Somebody's paying you to want only Americans to vote in elections. Iran is tricking you into thinking that the Israeli sexual blackmail honeypot global controlled network revealed in the Epstein files is connected to Iran. That's Iranian propaganda. You're basically a mullah now. And they've been doing this with Hamas and Tucker Carlson. I mean, it's the same thing over and over. And it's absurd and insulting. And you should be absurd. You should be insulted by the absurdity. They literally say, to erode public support for the joint U.S.-Israeli military operation, Iranian state media has sought to portray those countries' leaders as part of a corrupt and depraved Epstein class or Epstein regime. Oh, did they? Oh, the Iranian regime sought to portray the leadership of Israel and America as corrupt. They didn't have any help with that. Again, this is what I'm talking about. Like, this got published in an American newspaper of record in the Washington Post. They published this article unironically, trying to convince the American people that drawing connections between the Epstein class and the war for Israel's sake is Iranian propaganda. Please tell me you're not falling for this, for the love of God.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. They put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record, good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexandershow.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandershow.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexandershow.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best.
and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
There's a real question about whether there's a massive shift happening now in terms of world alliances long term.
Well, it's definitely, I think, a new world order.
Battle lines for a new world order based on power.
The new world order.
Because you really need to bring China into the creation of a new world order.
I think the president has sought to it. There's a new world order in trade. There's a new world order in globalization and the way that we invest in our economy versus, you know, foreign supply chains. There's a new world order, and the president is willing to shake up some old alliance structures. I mean, NATO, I think, is much different because of the president's leadership than it was 10 years ago. It was sort of coasting. It was effectively a protectorate of the United States of America. Obviously, you saw what happened in Venezuela. So, yeah, the president is putting a stamp on world history.
This clip went super viral, and I had people tagging me to it saying, what do you say to this? You know, you like J.D. Vance. Here he is saying he's for the New World Order. You have to go off what the policies are to decide if they're New World Order. And the Rockefellers and the globalists for 80 years have been calling this corporate British Empire, U.S. Empire, neoliberal system the New World Order. That means the carbon taxes, that means the UN being in charge, the World Economic Forum calling the shots, BlackRock being in total control, the whole Bill Gates, Rothschild, Rockefeller, international neoliberal order that they had established, that they admit is totally in trouble. Everybody's turning against them, regardless of Trump.
I see the need for a great reset. So people assume we are just going back to the good old world which we had and everything will be normal again. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and restricted their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
Let's start with a term that we're hearing quite a bit about in the last couple of years, the New World Order. We like to say in this country that we have the ability as Americans to elect. But the problem is we do not have the ability to select. We can only elect. Which means that we can only vote for those candidates which are put before us by our masters, our hidden masters behind the scenes.
A new world order can emerge, a new era.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
That system is in free fall collapse. So when you hear the old international order is dead from them, their new world order is dead, you see Putin saying, we now have to work with other nations to build a new world order. We're talking about the new international order.
Before our eyes, a completely novel world order is taking shape, and it's unlike everything that we know from the past. For example, Westphalian system or Yalta system. New powers are emerging. The nations understand more clearly their interests, their self-worth, uniqueness, and identity.
But the public, when the globalists would talk about their plan, they were saying, we control the world, we're establishing a planetary government, our new world order. So you call a new order, whoever it's run by, you could say America fighting off the British, creating the American system was a new world order. The British wrote, if this continues, our empire will fall. And it did. It took 100 and some years. That's the point, is a new boss, a new system. And there's a lot of the old same globalist players in there trying to salvage this and repackage the old New World Order as the new New World Order. And there's a big battle inside the Trump administration on how we form this new system, because a new system is being formed. And I don't just expose the globalist system and other systems, the communist systems. I promote good ones and try to get the public to promote good systems. Team America, Team Humanity. A system pro-God, pro-family, pro-natalist, pro-expansion. That's why I always explain. We can't just oppose the globalist order. We have to promote other systems and popularize those so that we can fill the vacuum with our new world order.
that isn't a centralized global government, but is nation states working together towards common aims and promoting freedom and justice and soft power. I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. While you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
Alex Jones lights the fuse, and Harrison Smith keeps it roaring. This is the War Room.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Second hour is on, and by the way, I want to announce quickly, we've got iodine. It's back, folks. Probably the best-selling, most popular product in InfoWars history was our iodine product, and we have reintroduced iodine in an even better form. It's T3 Trifecta Iodine Tincture, precision-prepared atomic iodine. It's a high-quality trace mineral tincture designed specifically to support thyroid function, hormone balance, T3, T4 activity, and healthy metabolic signaling. It's available now on thealexjonesstore.com, T3 Trifecta Iodine Tincture. It's on sale now, special sale for VIP members. It's 50% off for VIPs, 25% off for everybody else. Plus, you can get the America 250-year-old T-shirt. That's a limited edition at only $14.99. That's over 60% off. That deal ends Friday, 13th of March. But go today to thealexjonesstore.com and get T3 Trifecta Iodine Tincture and see what it can do for you. And with that, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, David Pine. He currently serves as the president of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Mr. Pine previously served as National Security Policy Director for United States Senator Mike Lee of Utah. He also served as United States Army officer and worked as an international programs manager on the Department of the Army headquarters staff responsible for the countries of the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, the Middle East, the Americas, and Africa from 2000 to 2003. He's an expert on geopolitics and has unparalleled insight into the complexities that contribute to the balance of power in international relations. You can find the task force at emptaskforce.us. David Pine writes at dpine.substack.com. That's dpyne.substack.com. And you can follow him on X at America First Con. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Pine.
Hey, Harrison, great to be back with you.
Good to be back with you as well. Of course, it's been a while, and I feel like every time you're on, we're on the cusp of a disaster. It's a little different. Now we're in the middle of a disaster, so it's a little bit different, you coming on today. What's your view of the Iran war? Do you think it's a disaster? Just give us the bird's eye view of the conflict currently raging in the Middle East.
Yeah, I call this war Operation Epic Fiasco because I think it is a quagmire that Trump has gotten us into. Certainly, he may have the ability to get us out. He's given conflicting signals virtually every day. Just think it was yesterday he said that the war was very complete.
Yep.
Sort of, essentially. And then a couple days before that, he said that, they probably won't surrender for many decades. And then the war, would continue until they unconditionally surrender. So he's really made this a very open-ended conflict. He even stated that we could fight this war forever if we had to. His objectives keep shifting. So most, virtually all of those objectives are unachievable in terms of taking down Iran's nuclear weapons program, taking out their underground missile silos and missile cities, and certainly overthrowing their regime. And I guess he could boast of overthrowing, you know, the regime because he replaced the Ayatollah Khomeini that had a fatwa against, you know, using nuclear weapons against the U.S. and Israel with his son, who's has no such compunctions apparently, and is really the favorite, runaway favorite of the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. So more of a hardliner than his father was.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting a handle on what the aims of this war are or how our leadership feels about it. I mean, I got criticized yesterday because I started the show with sort of a grok rundown. I was like, I got to use AI because I can't keep up. I mean, you know, you see one video that says one thing, then another video the day before, but actually those videos are reversed. And it's like, no, I need a computer to help me like establish a timeline here because things are changing so rapidly and so sort of, you know, arbitrarily. When it comes, and the nuclear weapon aspect of this is maybe the least certain as far as I'm concerned. Half the people are saying the nuclear weapon thing is a total red herring. It's not even a threat or never was a threat before. Half the people are saying actually they have, you know, essentially have nuclear weapons and could launch them at any time. I mean, it's every end of the spectrum, and I don't know, you know, where the truth lies. In your view, what is the condition of the Iranian nuclear program? Does it even exist, and how far along is it? What's your take on that?
Well, you probably recall that for the last, well, several years, but certainly the last four or five since you first had me on your program, I've been saying that Iran likely does have nuclear weapons. They likely do have nuclear missiles, IRBMs, MRBMs that they can fire off at other countries. I don't think they have ICBMs that can hit the United States, but certainly they likely have super EMP weapons. The NOR-2 and NOR-3 satellites are in orbit about 285 miles over the United States, and that is the optimum EMP vector attack altitude that I computed long before they did that. If they want to use a single super EMP over the center of the United States to shut down our entire critical infrastructure and electrical power grid. So I do think they have nuclear weapons. I think they've had them likely for a decade or more. So the very fact that they likely have nuclear weapons and they haven't used them shows that there was no imminent threat from Iran, and certainly that's been proven or echoed by the Pentagon that said they had no actionable intelligence whatsoever that Iran had any intention to preemptively attack the United States or Israel.
Well, and as the war rages on, again, we're getting completely conflicting reports from both sides. I mean, both sides are basically saying we're winning and it's going great. What do you think the truth is? I mean, and I ask that in the context of a nuclear weapon, and if Israel is getting, you know, smashed in the way that it's portrayed every night when, you know, I get on X and I just see these videos of Tel Aviv getting smashed, and I worry that, you know, they're a nuclear power, they're going to set off a nuclear bomb. Where do you think the momentum is? Like who's winning this war? And what do you think the conditions are that get us closer or farther away from a nuclear bomb being deployed to settle things once and for all?
Well, I think that, the conditions for victory have been clearly set out by Caroline Leavitt in the White House. You know, she, of course, is the White House press secretary. And, of course, they've been modified since the war began. They're no longer the three I mentioned. Now they're, you know, severely degrading their missile capacity, sinking their navy, ensuring they never have nuclear weapons. And I think regime change may have also been removed. And basically any in terms of degrading their nuclear program, that's been eliminated as well. But even the four remaining objectives, I think, are largely unachievable. I mean, certainly there's a chance we could sink their navy. The chances that we can really destroy the bulk of their ballistic missiles, I think that's very low. We certainly can't prevent them from obtaining nuclear weapons, whether they have them or not. They have reportedly about enough highly enriched uranium to build up to 12 to 15 atomic bombs, which they could miniaturize and put on their nuclear capable ballistic missiles, and including hypersonic missiles, perhaps even hypersonic cruise missiles. So, you know, essentially what the president has done is he's outlined a set of objectives that are unachievable. This is an unwinnable forever war. The only way we can overthrow the regime, there's really two possible ways. One is a nuclear first strike, and I think that's probably off the table. And the other one is that we deploy 500,000 U.S. troops to Iraq and attempt a ground invasion to take Tehran by force. And we don't have the troops to do that. You know, there's only about 460,000 troops, active duty troops in the U.S. Army, several hundred thousand more in the reserves. So if we were to do that, we'd essentially have to deploy the entire active duty, U.S. Army, and mobilize hundreds of thousands of reserves. And I guess that's on the table because, Carolyn Leavitt, I think 2 or 3 days ago, she said that President Trump has not ruled out resuming the draft, which we haven't had since 1972. So for the first time in 54 years, we're going to reinstate the draft. That really suggests that they might be seriously contemplating a full-scale U.S. ground invasion of Iran. And it really kind of makes a joke of all of his supporters that continue to claim this isn't a war when, we've killed or wounded thousands of Iranians. There's up to 20 countries involved, according to Fox News this morning. 150 U.S. military casualties, including the bulk of those are wounded. And we've hit 5,000 Iranian targets. So obviously, this is a war. And as Martha McCollum, Fox News host stated today, this is the closest that we've ever seen in terms of a war looking like World War, a world war since the end of World War II.
Right. And the European countries seem to be getting involved as well. And that goes hand in hand with France previously already talking about upping their nuclear stockpile and really sort of rattling their saber in that regard. As you're talking, and the crew is playing some videos of these underground cities of the missiles in Iran. I understand that we have bunker busters. There's a lot of stuff we can destroy. I mean, what do you think the situation really is between resources between America and Iran? I mean, America is saying we've destroyed their missile. They can't even launch them anymore. Meanwhile, Iran is saying we're prepared to go on for 10 years. Again, these wildly dichotomous claims, the truth's got to be somewhere in the middle. What do you think the situation is for military resources in the case of Iran?
Well, I think the problem is that Iran likely started the war with about 10,000 offensive missiles. The U.S., I think, probably had about 4,000 missile defense interceptors. I've heard that perhaps half of those have already been expended. Best case, we run out in 4 to 5 weeks. Already, I think we're prioritizing our missile defense interceptors. So essentially, we're only defending vital targets. Any target that's considered non-vital, we're essentially allowing the Iranian offensive missiles to get through unless they're targeting, our missile defense radars and missiles. But we've already seen Iran destroy, several of our, I think we had maybe a total of 8 missile defense radars. I think they've destroyed about 5 of those. And one of those was $1 billion and was really in charge of coordinating our THAAD missile defenses over a 3,000 mile kilometer perimeter. And so what I've heard is, previously we had 30 minutes warning time from offensive Iranian missile launches, and now we're down to 1 minute of warning time. So I think our missile defenses have been badly degraded. I think we're going to run out of certainly defensive missiles and likely offensive missiles as well before they run out of offensive missiles, probably well before. And reportedly, they have enough missiles to last them 60 to 90 days. Whereas by the end of the month, I think we will be pretty much exhausted of our certainly defensive missiles. So I think that Iran has the upper hand. They're the most likely to achieve a strategic victory over the United States. The U.S. certainly and Israel will continue to score some operational tactical successes. But if we lose the war, just like we won every battle in Vietnam, but we lost the war right after dropping the equivalent of 510 Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs on North Vietnam, a country that was over 10 times smaller than Iran is today, then it doesn't matter. I mean, winning the war is really the key.
Well, and what does that even look like? Because as I play it out, I mean, Iran, they're in it now, right? Like if they try to stop now, they're only setting themselves up for another attack, you know, a year from now, once we've rebuilt our forces or whatever. So like what is the Iranian victory conditions look like, do you think? Because they aren't offering any off ramps so far. So far, everything I've seen, they're basically saying, we're not interested in talks. We're going to keep this war going as long as we think we need to. What would Iranian victory conditions look like, do you think?
Well, I think their victory conditions are the same as they were back in June. You might remember that Trump also called for Iran's unconditional surrender on June 17th of 2025 in the run-up to Operation Midnight Hammer. So he called on them to surrender. Instead, he essentially accepted their terms for a ceasefire, which were the Islamist regime gets to stay in place, essentially indefinitely. They get to keep their nuclear weapons program. They get to keep their ballistic missile arsenal of consisting of MRBMs and intermediate range ballistic missiles as well. So I think those are kind of the, Iran's conditions. And essentially, what they're wanting is to reestablish deterrence with the U.S. and Israel to ensure that they won't be subjected to future U.S. and Israeli, unprovoked acts of aggression, including military strikes, both on their political and military leadership, and also on their military critical infrastructure. Because we've seen Israel take out 30 of their oil refineries in opposition to what President Trump has asked them to do.
That's what I mean. It's like, okay, I understand that victory condition, but to me, that means they want America out of the Middle East. Cause, if I'm Iran, I'm not going to trust America to say, we promise we won't use them. I want the missile batteries gone. I don't want it to be an option anymore. And so, I mean, is that where this goes? Is like Iran says, you put any bases in the Middle East, we're going to blow them up? Because how do they achieve that level of security of being safe from American attack if America is still there with the capability to attack? Is that not itself an impossible war aim?
Well, I don't think that's impossible. In fact, I think President Trump is certainly his national security strategy, which I think is outstanding, that he published in December of last year, and then subsequent to that, a national defense strategy in January of this year. I think those pretty much spelled out that we would, pull the bulk of our forces out of Europe and the Middle East, and that we would let Israel provide for its own, its own defense within the Middle East and ensure stability. So President Trump has gone against his own national security strategy in conducting this forever war. And, I think it's going to cause a lot of big problems. General Kane, of course, Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as well as the director of the Joint Staff, Vice Admiral, who President Trump fired, they both warned that this, the chances of success in terms of the missions that Trump had outlined, were quite low. And, President Trump was angry to hear that. He wanted to hear that, in 4 to 5 days, he could accomplish all of his missions, go home and outdo, George W. Bush, who he called for Bush's impeachment, during the Iraq war for, committing U.S. forces into a very similar forever war as Trump is now doing today.
I completely agree. What do you think the likelihood is that we end up with boots on the ground? They keep saying it's not happening. Pete Hegseth earlier today gave a speech where he reiterated, we're not putting boots on the ground, certainly not at the levels that would be necessary to invade Iran. But we've seen, I know you've shared some rumors about, the 82nd Airborne Division having their exercises canceled and possibly being prepared for a deployment. What do you think the likelihood is that we have American boots on the ground in large numbers?
Well, I think President Trump is, he's pretty unpredictable, and he kind of shifts back and forth. He kind of has this bipolar foreign policy. And so it makes it more difficult to predict what he's going to do. But I think the logical outcome of, of a war that's, forever war, is that you're going to have to If you're going to keep fighting the war and you run out of missiles and defensive missiles and you want to keep fighting and you want to have a chance of regime change, then I think you have to back that up with hundreds of thousands of ground troops invading Iran. And the problem is Iran is surrounded by mountains. It's got the Zagreb Mountains that are along its border with Iraq. So there's really, this would be a very, much easier to defend. It wouldn't be subjected to, large scale U.S. armored thrusts as we saw in the Iraq War that the U.S. used very successfully, both in the first Iraq War in 1991 and the second in 2003. So I think the chances increase with every passing day that the war goes on, especially if it goes on the next couple months.
And of course, we are already apparently repositioning THAAD batteries from South Korea to the Middle East. And we're being told, we can let fight forever. It's no problem. Why are we repositioning the THAAD batteries? I mean, is that not a pretty glaring, warning signal that things are not going as intended when we're repositioning these very crucial defensive, batteries from South Korea to move to the Middle East? I mean, what does that signal to you?
Yeah, I mean, President Trump, when the war first started, he said the war's going to last 7 days. Then he said 4 to 5 days. Then he said 4 to 5 weeks. And then he said maybe forever. So the fact that within the first week of the war, he was already calling for, to reposition our global missile defense stocks to the Middle East, it was a clear indicator that he had been told that to have a credible chance at victory, this war is gonna be a months long fight. He would not, in my judgment, do that unless he believed this war was likely to last for the next 100+ days, as we heard from CENTCOM. But CENTCOM is reportedly planning for a 3 to 7 month war at this point. So I think that's kind of a realistic assessment of what. How the war is going to last. I don't think the war can be won if you define victory as a regime change and taking out their nuclear weapons program and missile defense program in that time period. I think it's going to take a lot longer than 7 months. I would not at all be surprised to see this war last three years until the end of the Trump administration. But, ultimately, I think, we haven't seen it yet. We've only seen three Republicans in Congress oppose the war. Basically Congress gave a blank check to Trump when they opposed the Iran war resolution, which was, under the Constitution. It's Congress that should, authorize or declare war and not the president. So, this is an illegal and unconstitutional and unprovoked war of aggression against Iran. There was no rational or logical reason that we had to attack them, let alone attack them at this time. So I think that I think the chances this goes on, past this year are pretty high at this point.
It's very disturbing, but it really is an illegitimate war in any way you could possibly cut it. It's illegal according to the Constitution. It's illegitimate. Again, according to, the way that America should wage wars, but it's also just morally objectionable and strategically invalid. That's why this whole thing to me is just so baffling. And we're gonna hold you over for the whole hour, because I got a couple of videos I want to show you and get your input on, including a breaking video from CNN talking about the mining of the Straits of Hormuz. I want to find out how that changes the game in any way, and it appears as though it already is with Trump responding. We'll get response to that, as well as some of the statements from Hegseth and Senator Blumenthal, who says that, according to the classified briefings they're getting, boots on the ground look like an inevitability at this point, exactly like you're saying. And also we'll talk about how we can stop this, because I don't think anybody, any American who actually wants our country to do well, is cheering this on. We'll figure out why we're even doing it. On the other side, David Pine is my guest. Don't go anywhere, folks.
CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer, is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is, scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. Put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this in 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealphashield.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealphashield.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealphashield.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, Bandit.video, streaming, of course, on X. Make sure you're following all of our sites so you can keep up with the goings-on, especially if and when Infowars ceases to be. Of course, we'll continue the operation in a different form, and you can support that operation into the future by going to thealexjonesstore.com, making a purchase, the new T3 iodine, 50% off for VIP members, 25% off introductory price. One of the most life-changing and incredible products you'll ever buy. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. My guest is David Pine. He currently serves as the president of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He previously served as the National Security Policy Director for United States Senator Mike Lee, and he served as a United States Army officer and worked as an international programs manager on the Department of the Army headquarters staff responsible for the countries of the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East, the Americas, and Africa from 2000 to 2003. He's an expert in geopolitics. And I think you mentioned mining the Strait of Hormuz. There is an announcement on that, and I want to get your response to it. This was posted just a couple minutes ago by CNN, an update to the strategic situation there in Iran. We'll get Mr. Pine's response on the other side. Let's watch.
Iran has begun laying mines in the Strait of Hormuz. This is according to two people familiar with the matter. It's another major complication as the world's top oil exporter warns there could be, quote, catastrophic consequences for oil markets if the conflict keeps disrupting ship and oil tanker traffic through the strait. He says beyond upending shipping and insurance, the ongoing disruption could snowball, threatening aviation, agriculture, and other industries. A short time ago, the White House repeated President Trump's promise to provide government-backed insurance as well as naval escorts to keep tankers moving. So far, those shipping companies are resisting traveling through the region while the fighting goes on.
So what do you think the consequence of this will be? Is this more of a military consequence or an economic consequence? How do you think this changes the landscape with these reports of mining of the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, I think President Trump, I think it was a Truth Social, in which he basically said if Iran were to, block or shut down the Strait of Hormuz to oil tanker traffic, then Trump would take measures to essentially destroy Iran to make sure it never was able to rebuild and become a nation again. So this is something that Iran essentially did. I think it was the day after the war. They effectively shut it down. Not so much with the naval blockade, but just with the threat of being able to sink those tankers with their very large supply of anti-ship missiles, cruise missiles and ballistic missiles, even hypersonic missiles. And it's obvious who controls the Persian Gulf, who controls the Strait of Hormuz. And it's not the U.S. Navy because Trump has been unwilling to risk sending U.S. warships within less than several hundred kilometers of the strait. So I think Trump issued an empty threat that he is unable to enforce. The Strait of Hormuz, of course, is about the same distance between the closest point of the English Channel. The Straits of Dover, about 23 miles versus, I think, 22 or 21 for the English Channel, the Straits of Dover. So this is something that's eminently enforceable by Iran. We could sink their entire Navy and they'd still have the capabilities, both in terms of mines, submarine launched torpedoes, as well as, anti-ship missiles to enforce their blocking of the Straits. So, this is something that President Trump should have planned for, but it appears increasingly he did not understand and did not plan for as part of his Operation Epic Fury.
How does that even make sense? Because I don't disagree with you, but I keep hearing that, like, they didn't know. You knew. I knew. Like, do you really think they didn't know? How could they not have known that this was the case? Like, that's what I don't understand. That's the only explanation. They must not have known, because why would you do this if you did know? But – like, how does that even make sense? How do they not know Iran's capabilities when we did? Does that even make sense to you?
Yeah, so I think there's a tendency on the part of international aggressors, as sadly President Trump has become. You know, he used to be a Nobel Peace Prize during his first term and during his first 3.5 months of this term. But then something happened, whether it's the Epstein files or something else, kind of pushed him to be this neocon, warmongering president, really just John McCain 2.0. And I think what happened is, he engaged in this Venezuela regime change operation, which was really useless because, of course, he took Maduro and his wife in a snatch and grab kidnapping operation, but he left the Maduro regime firmly in power. Maduro's handpicked successor, Delcy Rodriguez, was vice president. Now she's interim president of communist Venezuela. Venezuela remains firmly allied with Russia and China. But anyway, it was a bloodless operation, of course. We had some troops that were severely injured in the Maduro operation, but none killed. And I think President Trump just projected the Maduro operation to Iran. In fact, in the run-up to his bombing of Iran, he was talking about sending special forces troops to try to do a snatch and grab of the Ayatollah himself. Instead, he decided that The prospects of that, of success for that were much lower than simply trying to, you know, blow them up with bombs. And of course, we know that, the new Ayatollah, or rather the new Supreme Leader, Mojtaba Khomeini, his father was killed, his wife was killed, his mother was killed, his sister was killed by the U.S. and Israel, his brother-in-law and either his niece or nephew. So he is, he's wanting vengeance. He's not going to stop this war. You know, President Trump reportedly tried to offer a ceasefire the night of the first bombings occurred because Iran fired four anti-ship cruise missiles on the USS Abraham Lincoln, and reportedly, came fairly close to striking. And I think Trump kind of got freaked out a little bit, and you could see. He was captured on the cameras walking from, I think it was probably Marine Force One to the White House. And he normally stops, you know, no matter how late it is at night, if there's press, he'll talk. Right. And that was the one time that he looked a little bit scared and kind of unsure what to do. And he did not take any questions. He just walked back by the cameras, kind of looking down and, you know, looking to the press, but then looking away. So
certainly not the same attitude that he had following the Venezuela operation.
No, I think it was by night one of the war. I think he was, clearly understood that even though he had taken out, you know, reportedly 40 or 50 top Iranian leaders, that they'd already rejected his ceasefire offer and in no uncertain terms and told him to pound sand. Just like he essentially told them when they offered it a really good peace offer the night before the attacks began, and he rejected them. So you're right. I think Iran's leaders are in no mood to negotiate at this point, and President Trump is demanding their unconditional surrender, and that's not a recipe for peace. He can claim that the war is very, very nearly complete, but if Iran refuses to stop attacking U.S. bases in the region and refuses to attack Israel, Trump is going to feel forced to keep retaliating.
How is Israel weathering all of this? There's a meme. I don't know if the crew can find it. I shared it on my ex, but it's basically, you know, it's Iran and America sort of lobbing missiles at each other, both saying, we demand unconditional surrender. Meanwhile, Israel is the one getting hit by all of the missiles. I mean, they seem to be taking a pounding here. Again, I don't even know if that, once again, Israel totally bans and makes illegal anybody sharing, you know, video from there. So we don't really know what is actually happening, but it seems like Tel Aviv is getting pounded pretty badly. And yet Israel seems to be screwing us up constantly. They apparently, bombed these oil fields completely against Trump's wishes. Apparently it was an Israeli bomb that killed the people that Trump was hoping to work with to replace the Ayatollah. But they were killed by Israel. So like Israel seems to be kind of screwing us over. We seem to have different strategic, you know, goals. Yeah, here's the meme. I can't survive more of this. They're, of course, the ones who started the war. Meanwhile, Iran and America could kind of go on forever. How accurate is this meme, Mr. Vine, for the most unprofessional way to ask this? But, I mean, how accurate is that? How long can Israel survive, and what's the role they play in all this at this point?
Well, it's interesting that, most reports indicate that the reason that Trump negotiated ceasefire of the 12-day war is because Israel was getting pounded by Iranian hypersonic missiles that they couldn't shoot down. The air defense system is not equipped to be able to shoot down Iranian hypersonic missiles. And so they were getting through. They were hitting Israeli military bases and critical infrastructure. It was just a day or two ago that reportedly Iran hit Israel's largest power plant in Israel and took out 19% of their grid power and turned out the lights in Tel Aviv for I'm not sure how long. It might have been minutes or hours, but clearly they're sending a message that despite the fact that President Trump's claiming that their Air Force, Navy, and missile forces and nuclear, weapons, production centers are wiped out, they can still hit us back real hard. And they've really launched a lot of attacks, against, U.S. military bases in the region, dozens of military bases, in multiple countries. And they're using that to kind of coerce, our Gulf allies to try to pressure us to end the war, because they're shutting down, Gulf oil production, certainly Gulf oil traffic. The Strait of Hormuz is one of the key strategic choke points in the world through which 20% of all global oil passes. They're letting Chinese tankers go through and no one else. So President Trump reportedly, this is all part of his 4D chess master plan to, take out Chinese oil resources, given that up to, 25 to 30% of Chinese oil is obtained from Iran. But it's not, the war hasn't affected Chinese oil imports from Iran because Iran controls the straits and Iran is letting all the Chinese tankers pass through it. So it's only negatively impacting, the U.S. and allied economies, in some cases very, pretty massively. And of course, that's going to have huge effects for the midterms. Whereas if we had a chance to hold the Senate, as a Republican, in November, I think those chances have now been flushed down the toilet by President Trump.
I agree, unfortunately. And actually, I was planning on later in the show playing a video of both Lindsey Graham basically saying, I like Israel more than America and I wish I lived there. Totally crazy. And then, of course, his competitor, like somebody challenging him for a Senate seat, is a far leftist radical communist, but she presents herself as, I'm just the mom down the street that wants to help, rescue America from these insane people like Lindsey Graham. So they're just handing it over to the Democrats. I mean, they're going to be radical. They're going to be insane. But all they have to do is go, hey, we're not starting wars in Iran like these crazy people. And they're going to win. So it's just, it is inexplicable. Again, this is just add that to the list of like strategically it's stupid, morally it's stupid, politically it's suicidal. Which is why it's just so utterly baffling why all of this is happening. I want to get your comments on this. This was Senator Blumenthal earlier today. He came out of an Iran briefing and gave a quick press conference. Clip number 3 here. This is from C-SPAN, Senator Richard Blumenthal. Let's watch and we'll get your comments on the other side.
I emerged from this briefing as dissatisfied and angry, frankly, as I have from any past briefing in my 15 years in the Senate. I am left with more questions than answers, especially about the cost of the war. My questions have been unanswered, and I will demand answers because the American people deserve to know. And I guess I am most concerned about the threat to American lives of potentially deploying our sons and daughters on the ground in Iran. We seem to be on a path toward deploying American troops on the ground in Iran to accomplish any of the potential objectives here. And there is also, as disturbingly as anything else, the specter of active Russian aid to Iran putting in danger American lives. Literally, Russia seems to be aiding our enemy actively and intensively with intelligence and perhaps with other means. And China also may be assisting Iran. So the American people deserve to know much more than this administration has told them about the cost of the war, the danger to our sons and daughters in uniform, and the potential for further escalation and widening of this war, a war of choice made by this president, not chosen by the American people, with potentially huge consequences to American lives.
So it just shows you how upside down and backwards the world is when I'm agreeing with the despicable Senator Blumenthal, but I can't help disagree. I can note the irony that he's literally wearing a Ukrainian flag pin while he says this, while he decries the overseas wars. So he mentioned a couple things there. He seems, fairly sure that boots on the ground is next. I want your comments on that. But also, are they surprised that Iran or that China and Russia, rather, are using Iran as a proxy to wage war against America by providing them, you know, possibly targeting or weapon systems or intelligence. It's what we did to them in Ukraine. It's just we're of course, our own bad activities are biting us in the butt. David Pine, what's your take on what Mr. Blumenthal said right there?
Well, firstly, I want to comment briefly on what you said before. You know, I'm old enough to remember during the first election that I was old enough to vote in 1988 that Republicans were running ads that saying that Democrats start all the big wars and the Republican presidents end them. So Democrats started World War One, World War Two, Korean War, Vietnam War. Republican presidents ended the Korean War, you know, with Eisenhower in 53 and with Nixon in 73. In Vietnam. So as you stated, I think that the party of peace is typically the victor in presidential elections, and President Trump ran as the candidate of peace in three different elections, legitimately so. And now he's going to be running as the candidate of war and the party of war with the Republican Party. And that's going to drag us down to defeat, perhaps with a generational Democrat, victory and takeover of all branches of government in terms of the White House and members, both houses of Congress. But in terms of Blumenthal, yeah, I think I was watching a Senate hearing with Elbridge Colby, our excellent Undersecretary of War. And one of the Democrats, it might have been Blumenthal or might have been Senator Kaine, stated that, Putin started a reckless war of choice in Ukraine. And I don't know if he made that. Oh, actually, it wasn't Putin. He said that maybe Trump did that in Iran. Or no, I'm sorry. It was the chairman, the Republican chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee stated that it was Putin that started a reckless war of choice in Ukraine, ignoring the fact that that's exactly what Trump did in Iran. Yeah. You know, reckless war of choice. We didn't have to fight. And so, but it's interesting, your comment also about agreeing with Blumenthal. You know, this is probably the first time in decades that I've turned on CNN and MSNBC and have been agreeing with them on the Iran issue because, you know, 99% of what the Democrats say, I strongly disagree with, but I just can't stand all the lies, whether it's a regime change in Venezuela, which I support in theory. But not in terms of how we did it. And then with Iran, these are neocon operations. They're globalist deep state. I'm just amazed that only three congressional Republicans oppose the war in Iran when it's so obviously, you know, it's worse than what Bush did in Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really don't see anything happening between now and November that's going to make people think, oh, you know what? That was a good idea. I mean, there are no victory conditions that would make all of this worth it. And as you point out, you know, Venezuela, I think was sort of grooming America into Iran in more ways than one. I think the conversations that were had about, well, is this a valid military target? These boats, are they really, imminent threat? I mean, obviously that was sort of setting a precedent knowing that they would be using those same arguments to go into Iran, a little bit later. I mean, how strategic do you think that was? How much do you think Venezuela had to do with setting the stage for what they knew would be a invasion or a war against Iran around February of this year?
Well, I think, I mean, President Trump, his ambitions seem boundless. It's like he switches from one day or one week from one country to another. You know, first it was Venezuela and then it was Greenland, and then he decided that Denmark was too powerful for the U.S. to fight them militarily. so he gave up and unconditionally surrendered on the one issue that I would have loved to see him fight, is to invade and take over Greenland, which is a country with 53,000 people that really there's no good reason to not have it be part of the United States or under U.S. control. And, you know, we were afraid of Denmark. You know, we're not afraid of Iran that likely has nuclear weapons, but we're afraid of Denmark. Really, of course, it was the neocons that, you know, talked about, well, that could be the end of NATO if we did that. But then, of course, after Greenland, he moved on to Iran and Cuba. And he can't stay focused. You know, there's a axiom of strategy is that you have to stay focused on one, you fight one more at a time. And President Trump, he loves to fight multiple wars simultaneously. You know, he's got the Ukraine war. He promised to end on day one. That's still going on, 14 months into his presidency almost. He easily could have ended that. I presented him with the plan. I actually got the plan to one of his top national security cabinet members, Tulsi Gabbard. First time ever I'm revealing that. Tulsi Gabbard got a copy of my plan. I don't think it got past her, but certainly elements of my peace plan were incorporated into the Trump peace plan, probably just because they were good ideas, not because they took them from me. I'm not claiming any credit on that, but he could have ended that war with a bilateral agreement with Russia. Instead, he wants to keep fighting that and giving Ukraine 3,550 Iran missiles, risking World War III on that front. And now, as you mentioned, he's getting the blowback, you know, just as the U.S. attempted in many ways unsuccessfully to try to weaken Russia militarily, economically with a long war in Ukraine. That's exactly what Russia and China are doing to us, will do to us in Iran. They will weaken the U.S., deplete all our offensive and defensive missiles, so we can't fight them in a big war either in Eastern Europe or Taiwan. And I think, you know, a lot of strategic thinkers are saying that Russia and China will be the big victors of prolonged, protracted U.S. regional war with Iran. I think that's what I've been saying from the beginning.
And just quickly before we have to wrap up, what is the effect on the Ukraine war that this is having? I mean, are there munitions being drawn away from there? Is that changing the calculus of how long that war is going to go on in any significant way?
Well, there are a lot of neocon and neoliberal articles, writers that have stated exactly that, you know, this will help Putin win the war in Ukraine because it dries up the armaments that the U.S. could have supplied to Ukraine. It also, you know, greatly increases oil prices to make Russian crude much more attractive, you know, and it increases the incentives to for the U.S. and our allies to start importing more Russian oil to reduce the price, the overall global price of oil. And as we saw that, you know, Trump is already, he's encouraging India to buy Russian oil to help keep the prices, relatively lower. So I do think that this increases the chances that Russia can conquer Ukraine sooner, although I think that Ukraine will run out of troops by certainly by November in either case. So I think Ukrainian defeat this year and surrender are inevitable. I think Taiwan could move on, China could move on Taiwan in April or October, which are the two best months to invade. So I think this is really going to be, historians are going to look back on this war as probably the worst strategic foreign policy mistake we've seen in probably since the end of World War II.
That's what I've been saying. I've been asking, is this the biggest mistake of all time? Because as you lay out there, the possibility for negative consequences are sort of endless, and the positive consequences I still have never seen elucidated anywhere. So all risk, no reward, completely insane, incredible stuff. David Pine, follow him on his website, emptaskforce.us, his Substack, dpine.substack.com. And of course, you can follow him on X. What's your X account? It's not your name.
It's at America First Con.
At America First Con. David Pine, emptaskforce.us, dpine.substack.com. Thank you so much for coming on, sir. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Harrison. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. We'll be back for the third hour, folks. Don't go anywhere.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. They put it in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue.
But this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with ethylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexshowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. My job, as I see it right now, and it has been for the last week or so, is to desperately try to sift through the BS and find the little nuggets of truth contained within. And it's hard. It's not an easy task with AI, with recycled videos, you know, from last June being purported as modern strikes. I feel like I've done a pretty good job. There are not a lot of glaring mistakes as far as I can tell. But really the most, you know, challenging part of it is the fact that Israel keeps a very tight lid on anything having to do with the war. You can go to jail for 5 years in Israel just for uploading a video of a missile impact or the damage afterwards. And they have police hunting people down, like finding out where videos were filmed and trying to, you know, geolocate whoever uploaded them. They're very serious about not letting information from Israel get out, which is why I don't trust a lot of the information in Israel. However, this is a BBC news clip with their correspondent Kasra Naji from Tel Aviv. Now, I translated this using AI, so you'll hear a robotic voice and there's some awkward pauses because of the speed at which the translated text, you know, corresponds with the original language. So it sounds a little odd, but this, we translated this. So you're not going to see this translation anywhere else. This is a, you know, reporter speaking in Hebrew to BBC talking about what it's like in Tel Aviv last night. Let's watch.
Kasra, tell us about the situation in Tel Aviv. Jamal, Iranian missile attacks have continued here. The sirens have sounded several times today, and the last time the sirens sounded was a Hezbollah missile attack. Let's keep in mind that the distance from Lebanon to here is very short. And when a missile is fired from Lebanon towards here, there is little time to so-called warn the people. Our phones didn't respond to the rockets fired from Lebanon today, and we only heard a quick warning. This was something new. We haven't seen Hezbollah rockets reach Tel Aviv in the few days we've been here, and that too, considering the loud explosions we heard, it was clear that they were big rockets. God knows what kind of rockets. But, before, there were several Iranian missile attacks here, which caused damage in on we're working I just read that one of the aid organizations here wrote that in the past 24 hours 76 people were injured here, and now 2 people have been killed. It seems that this is a situation that is becoming more and more difficult for the people here to bear. And last night, they were talking about the fact that this situation, that is, the rocket attacks, could continue for a long time. Note that here in Israel, everything is half closed. Right here in Tel Aviv, many shops and businesses are closed. Many of them are closed. The streets are deserted and there are many cars. You don't see many people on the streets. Today, one of our journalist colleagues came from Jerusalem and said that the entire market there is closed on holidays. He showed me a photo that it is completely empty. So the situation is becoming difficult for the Israeli government. The schools were supposed to open next week, but now I heard that the opening of my schools has been postponed for the time being.
So there you go. That's a reporter in Tel Aviv describing what it's like. Doesn't sound pleasant, that's for sure. basically admitting that there's no warning before the missiles arrive. They get about a minute warning, although he said their phones didn't even go off for the latest one. Now, these missiles are, remember, coming from Hezbollah. They're coming from Lebanon. They're not even coming from Iran, which, of course, has the real monumental missile supply. And, of course, this is all after we were told that Hezbollah was totally destroyed. It was totally eradicated. They weren't a threat anymore. And yet they are actually not just raining missiles down on Tel Aviv and Haifa and scoring hits and destroying, you know, radar, everything, just every, all the missile launchers. They're really kicking butt. They're also doing sorties into Israel, which is not what Israel expected. And the Israelis are really not happy about this and are ready for it to be over.
You have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I set out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, I want the widest selection of T-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at X.com.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The War Room. I'm going to take your calls this hour. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. We are, of course, monitoring the feeds. We'll bring you any, you know, breaking updates when it comes to the war in Iran. Of course, it's been a bizarre couple of days with the American leadership, so-called, just aggressively flailing, I think is how I'll put it, flailing in an aggressive fashion. Let me know when you have my computer screen, guys, because as we saw during the war in Gaza, war against Gaza by Israel, you'd have things like American politicians going over there and signing bombs, you know. This is for October 7th, or like, I hope this hits a child, you know, whatever sort of message they were sending to the innocent and trapped people. They were bombing in tent cities in Gaza. It's very offensive. It's very strange to have American politicians gleefully, literally signing on to a genocide, essentially, the bombing campaign that left Gaza in absolute ruins. Well, Iran has a similar tradition, only a little bit of a different message. They've posted a picture of a giant missile. It says, message on Iran's latest missile barrage on Israel, quote, in the memory of the victims of Epstein Island. Look, I know they're just playing, you know, they're just doing PR, but it's smart. But it's smart PR. Because now you've got, you know, the Washington Post and others going, it's Iranian propaganda to associate this with Epstein. Like, not really. Not really. In fact, the similarities, the overlap is sort of undeniable. Hard to ignore. But Iran's playing it up. I guess this is just like the issue when you actually have a country that's been thoroughly infested by criminal cabal of blackmailing sex traffickers from Israel. Yeah, Iran gets to mock you for it, I guess. Yeah, finish them. America loves Israel. Always. Nikki Haley. Finish them. Incredible. Did I give out the phone number? The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. We are taking your calls now on the war in the Middle East. And once again, if you want to know the truth about it, and I swear I've been saying this for the last 5 years that I've been on the air, if you want to know about the Middle East, the history, the current events, or the future, look at Lebanon. Not a lot of people mention it. Lebanon's always a, you know, sideshow. It's always the war on Gaza and Hezbollah's involved, and the war on Iran, and we're attacking Lebanon also. If you actually take Lebanon for your center point, if you take a point of view located in Lebanon and looking at everything from that perspective, everything actually becomes a lot more clear and actually makes a lot more sense. And actually, if you certainly study the history of Lebanon, it's like a microcosm of what's happening the world over, which is why I've talked about Lebanon so much and why I find it such an interesting, you know, point of attention, and why it's frustrating to me that like nobody else pays attention to it. I don't know why it is, but you bring up Lebanon, everybody's like, yeah, whatever, and it turns it off. Iran, oh, everybody wants to talk about that. Lebanon is key. Lebanon is key. Hezbollah is key to understanding the Middle East. Right now, what it does most importantly is illustrate and reframe everything we're hearing about Iran. Because at the same time that we're at war with Iran, Lebanon is being devastated by Israel with help from America. We provide them cover, and we, you know, nothing they do is without our permission and cooperation. And so you can argue and squabble and debate whether any of the claims are valid about Iran. There is no argument. None of them are valid about Lebanon. And so it just puts into perspective. It makes clear. It's like, okay, everything they're saying about Iran, it doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, look at Lebanon. They're just going to attack people. They're just going to try to drive people out. At this moment, 700,000 Lebanese have been displaced. 1 million Israelis are in shelters. The IDF struck hundreds of targets in Lebanon since this weekend and ordered what officials described as an unprecedented evacuations as Hezbollah attacks reached central Israel. About 700 people have been displaced from their homes in Lebanon in recent days. Following evacuation orders described as unprecedented, hundreds have been killed in IDF bombings across the country, dozens of them women and children. So remember, Hamas doesn't exist in Lebanon. They aren't hiding under the cities, and so they're using human shields. No, not really. I mean, Hezbollah exists in Lebanon, but it doesn't mean you just get to bomb the hell out of the capital city of a country because they have a problem. You know, they have a militia that exists in their country that they don't even have the ability to get out of their country. But then you look at like the different factions that get involved in Lebanon. And Lebanon has a sizable population of Christians. They're known as the Maronite Catholics in particular, known as the Maronite faction in Lebanon, but they're the Lebanese Catholics. And right now, they're like, over the last few days has been a heroic but tragic story of a Lebanese priest. Basically, you know, Israel came and issued evacuation orders to these towns, and the Catholic priest there said, we're not evacuating. There's no Hezbollah here. That's been confirmed. We don't have weapons. We are not armed. We cannot fight you, but we're not leaving. And so Israel bombed him. And actually, they bombed the church, and there were some, you know, parishioners that were trapped in the rubble. And when this priest, Catholic priest, went rushing to try to rescue the people who'd been injured in the first bombing, they did a second strike, as they often do, to hit the first responders and killed this priest in the strike. Now you have the Maronite Christians calling on the Vatican to mobilize in defense of the Christians in Lebanon, where once again, it is indefensible. These cities that they're bombing do not have Hezbollah in it, and it's like guaranteed, it's known. This priest that died, he was like an important guy. He met with the president of Lebanon. He was in good standing with the Lebanese government, and Hezbollah was not in his area. And he died like a martyr, refusing to leave under threat of death, not fighting back, not posing a threat, simply being murdered. And this really should be a rallying call for Christians around the world. And I know the Vatican magazine did publish a cover shot with the graves of the children killed in the Iranian strike on the school, condemning that and bemoaning the, you know, senseless loss of innocent blood in the Middle East. So everything comes into a little bit clearer relief when you look at Lebanon in particular. Gaza, you got Hamas, it gets a little bit fuzzy. Iran. You got all these different claims. It's a debacle, but they're certainly a dangerous enemy. Lebanon is where the sides are very clear, and there's not a lot of nuance, and there's not a lot of justification for what happens. And then you look at that picture that we just saw. And this, again, if you look back at the Lebanese Civil War, you'll see factions that you wouldn't normally expect. This is Syria retold daily. This is a Al-Qaeda. This is the Al-Jolani Al-Qaeda extremist faction in Syria. They say, our eyes are on Lebanon. Big surprises in the coming days. Expect us. So in Lebanon, you have the extremist Jolani ISIS faction teaming up with the Israeli faction to go after Hezbollah to leave Lebanon defenseless so it can be taken over, possibly partitioned, with a portion conquered by Israel and another portion absorbed into greater Syria. Is it becoming clear now, like, what the real factions are, like, that it's not Muslim versus Jew or Muslim versus Christians and Jews or Christians versus, no. There's multiple divisions. There are lots of, intertwined alliances that you have to deal with. But at the end of the day, the Shia and the Orthodox team up in opposition to the Sunni, the Israelis, and actually in the civil war in Lebanon, the Maronites. It's really interesting because now you're probably regretting that. Now the Maronites are not in favor of Israel, but they were back in the 1980s at the time that they wanted to get rid of the PLO and were cooperating with Israel for that. I'm just saying look at Lebanon, pay attention to Lebanon and ask yourself why Lebanon gets so little attention in the media when it clearly embodies of an outsized, portion of the strategic planning of the people involved. But there you go. You got ISIS, Al-Qaeda teaming up with Israel to attack Lebanon, try to get them in a pincer move as they attack from the north and Israel from the south. Now, Israel is also, Hezbollah, downed a helicopter, they claim, or at least drove back multiple incursions into the Bekaa Valley by Israel. The stories about that are very interesting. Apparently, Israel is wearing Lebanese army uniforms, which is a war crime, but they did that. And the whole thing was predicated on retrieving the bones of a IDF soldier that had been killed there like 40 years ago. And it's one of these weird situations where either that's true, in which case, once again, we have a little bit more evidence that really the religious extremists in this conflict are the Israelis. After all, they went in, killed 40 people, lost soldiers, all for just the symbol of these bones being returned because they're on profane, goyish land and they must be returned to sacred Israel. And it's like, you killed 40 people over that? That's pretty extreme. That's kind of a religiously extreme position to take. So either they're telling the truth about why they keep sending in suicide missions to kill a bunch of people and it's all about returning these bones like they're some sacred relic, crazy, or they're lying about that, and that's just the cover for, much more real and tangible military activity, in which case I would wonder what that is. What is worth sending in helicopter after helicopter as they keep getting blown up or your people getting captured? It's just completely insane. And so once again, the rumors of Hezbollah's demise were overblown, right? It's like, yeah, they're still there and they're still actually winning. They're actually winning in all of this, which is incredible, whether you like it or not. Let's go out to your calls now. We've got Sean in California. Go ahead, Sean, you're on the air. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Harrison, good talking to you again. Wanted to compliment you on a Gray Area Talks with Rex and Tim the other day. Conversations like that, especially in regards to Iran, are what you younger guys need to be doing, because it's your generation that's going to be, drafted and conscripted to this. My generation, Gen X, we're kind of on the way out, like the boomers. We're going to be at the last of the line if they have to conscript people. So you guys, you know, you're doing the right thing. You've been on fire today, point by point by point. And I just want to say, keep it up. The last guest you had was on point. And you guys got to weigh this out. This is your future. I'm not saying I'm passing the baton just yet, but there's a lot of us, we realize it's going to be on you guys to figure out where does this country go. And those discussions that you're doing and this news coverage you're doing is a vital part of keeping the public informed. So I thank you. And I want to tell everyone, get that methylene blue, guys, because I've been using that. And let me tell you, I can go 3 days without brain fog or an energy drink when I take a few drops of that methylene blue. So,
it is,
God bless
it is powerful stuff. Thank you so much, Sean. And, yeah, everybody should go watch Gray Area talks with Rex and Tim, and I was on there on Sunday. It was a good conversation because they ask good questions and they have good sort of, you know, especially, I mean, Rex is amazing, obviously. Everybody knows Rex. Tim has a different kind of attitude where he always kind of brings it back to reality and kind of goes, well, hold on, let's recenter. Anyway, very good, very good stuff. And of course, they're significantly younger than I am. So they really are the future. And of course, everybody in the younger generations, it just knows so much better how to navigate propaganda and how not to be fooled by this stuff. And it's funny because people are framing this as if it's like, well, when the boomers finally leave, you know, the crazies are going to take over. It's like, no, we're not the crazies. We're not the ones who start wars. We're not the ones who have been just saturated in ridiculous propaganda for several decades, the point where we can't break out of it. Like, no, we're born free and we'll continue to be. And of course, the younger people have an even better time of it than I do. Thanks for the call, Sean. Let's go to Michael in New Mexico now. I want to talk about what victory would look like for the Iran war. Go ahead, Michael, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just have a comment that everything Trump is talking about in terms of victory has to do with specifically conventional warfare. And it just makes me think of how, with like school shootings, a teenager that's hardly held a gun can do so much damage before he's finally stopped. So even if Iranian special forces are much, much worse than ours, to just think of like how much damage one team could do. And in terms of this, our country was founded on basically American Revolution standing up to a much stronger force. So I just think it's so arrogant that we think that a smaller, like unconventional force couldn't do damage against us. And I remember reading like some book done by a special forces like individual and like talking about fighting like Iraq or like Afghanistan. And he said that if they underestimated like the enemy being the Taliban or Al Qaeda, they would probably get killed, even though they're like so much like stronger.
Right.
And I just think we've like really miscalculated things here, because everything we're talking about is conventional victories, not what they could do unconventionally.
Right. No, that's a bunch of great points, Michael. I really appreciate that call. Yeah. It's a really interesting, way of thinking about it. I don't think I have anything to add. I think you're exactly right. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah. I think we're all sort of on the same page here. All the normal people are kind of on the same page. It's just that, elite, you know, and now, analyst class that goes on CNN, they can't quite figure out like this incredibly simple and obvious stuff that we can. Amazing, isn't it? We got another Sean in Colorado this time. Sean from Colorado, thank you for calling in.
Hi, Harrison. Yeah, let me just be clear about how this war in Iran started. I mean, the plan started ever since the plans were in place for 9/11. And, you know, I know you know that. It's just, I want to make it clear that this is all about the Greater Israel Project. This has nothing to do with, you know, the freedom of the Iranian people and everything else. And I'll argue that there's more people out there that hate the United States, want death to the United States, death to Israel, all that. So, you know, to think that these people are over here, like, cheering us on, and I'm sure there's groups of that, you know, those people that think that, you know, they're going to get a better regime or whatever. But this has nothing to do with, you know, their freedom. And like I said, I'm sure you know that. I just want to make it clear for the audience. But this all leads to prophecy. This all leads to revelation. I just can't stress it enough how close we are to it. And I know you don't really get excited about talking about prophecy. You made that clear yesterday with your guest, but he made some really good points that this stuff is all coming. It's all getting ready to happen, and exactly when, we don't know, but you can't sit here and act like it's not right around the corner. I mean, especially when the Israeli soldiers have their patches with the Greater Israel Project in the temple, where they did the real sacrifice of the red heifer. That was not a joke. Let's be clear. That was a real, the blemishless red heifer. They went ahead and did it. They're doing their little miracles or whatever, sprinkling the ashes. That's a part of their thing. So, and it's important to understand the lost sheep of the house of Israel is doing exactly what the scripture said they'll do. They're supposed to be lost. They're supposed to usher in their Antichrist. And they won't come to repentance until midway through the tribulation, when the remnant will flee from Jerusalem and they'll flee to the mountains for protection from God. And that's when the Jews get saved. And it's important to understand because, listen, Harrison, I know you want to leave this replacement theology, but the church did not replace Israel. God still has to go back to dealing with Israel and the heathen of the world in a very harsh way during Revelation. And that's why he brings the two witnesses. That's why the 144,000 are there to preach the gospel, to get the lost sheep of the house of Israel to come to repent, because they're lost. They're going to be doing a bunch of goofy stuff. So there's really no point in supporting all that, like a lot of Zionist churches are, and they're lying to you if they're saying that, Israel isn't doing anything, they're just a victim in all this. No, they're going to continue to provoke their enemies to war. This is what the Antichrist will do, and all these countries, these nations, are eventually going to be at the doorstep of Israel, and they're going to take over half that city over there in Jerusalem, and it's going to get really nasty, and I just advise people,
It absolutely could. My thing about prophecy is that, in my opinion, you're not really supposed to change your behavior based on it, right? It's going to happen no matter what you do. So the idea, you're just supposed to follow Jesus, you're supposed to act right and, not be changing your behavior because you're trying to fulfill prophecy. That's just not how it works. So if you want to try to, glean information about the future by interpreting, current events through prophecy, you may be able to do that. The problem is that the people like Benjamin Netanyahu, you think this guy believes in prophecy? Absolutely not. But he is more than happy to read, passages out of the Torah about Amalek and trick a bunch of, evangelicals into supporting him because they believe the prophecy. I think the prophecy of the end times is used by bad actors who not only, maybe they believe it, maybe they don't, but they orchestrate things deliberately to take advantage of prophecy. I mean, it's like the Bene Gesserit in Dune, right? You just see the every, planetary world with rumors and prophecies about strangers that would come and change things. And then if you're a Bene Gesserit, anywhere you go as a pre-made, population that's ready to accept you as their leader, these things are very useful to the bad guys to manipulate and use. And look back in history. I know it sounds shocking to think because of all the technology, because of how perfectly things are aligning, seemingly in some cases with the end times, that it's like, this has to be it. This has to be the end. I'm telling you, people literally committed mass suicide over their beliefs. You think they felt any less strongly than you do? Just understand that it could very well be in 10 years that Israel is something completely different. There's a Palestinian state now, and Israel has become a multi-ethnic, democracy. And there's who knows what happens next. But the idea that this is going to happen, we are going to go to nuclear war, and they're going to build the third temple, and the Antichrist is going to come, you don't know that, and you have no way of knowing that. And God will make a fool of you for thinking that you know that. And everybody else who's ever tried to rebuild the third temple was met with earthquakes and plagues and humiliation and catastrophic failure. I don't understand why this would be any different this time. So that's my take on prophecy, is I think it's being used by smart people to trick dumb people. It's still true, only you're not supposed to do anything about it or try to help it come about. God has it in hand. Thank you.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these... And fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. Sort of put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your doc chamber's on. Medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theallshowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theallshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theallshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of the War Room. Let me go back out to your phone calls. A couple things first. For one thing, I want to draw attention to this user on X named Junior Trades, but it's Junior spelled with a V instead of a U, J-V-N-I-O-R Trades. It's a backup account to another account that was just called Junior. And it was a very useful account. I'd been getting a lot of the videos that I've been playing here from his account. He's a Palestinian who has connections there and was able to, you know, post a lot of videos from sources that you didn't get anywhere else. But he disappeared yesterday. His account disappeared, and he took to his alt account, basically saying that he's being stalked. He says, right now I'm leaving my home and heading somewhere else, somewhere safe. I never imagined my life would reach a point like this. I never imagined the words on a screen could carry so much weight, so much anger, so much misunderstanding. He says, his account was banned. He says, I'm not suicidal. I'll be making a public statement very soon. My life is currently under threat. I'm in danger. If you see this, please repost or reply a dot. I'll get into this guy. He seems legit, and he's posted some screenshots of some of the people threatening him. But he basically says that he's a Muslim guy. He's Palestinian, born in Palestine. But he says, when I got back home, there were cars in front of my property and a few people circling my house. I had to leave to a safe spot. Not sure what's going on. I'm sorry for anything I ever posted on X. I know free speech comes at a price. I'm not willing to let my family pay it. My main got banned 12 hours ago. Now my life is under constant threat in real life, and people are getting ideas against me. I'm not sure what's going on. Losing my platform after being doxxed is possibly the worst thing that could happen, as I cannot even report content or fight back against those who are attacking my platform. I realize I've made mistakes, and some posts hurt the opinions of people, but I truly believe in free speech. That's why I practiced it. And it's just freaky to me, because yesterday as I was reading, you know, him saying he was banned and his life is in danger, and people were like showing up to his house, and he says he has it all on video, and he's, you know, going to publish a report about it. And I was thinking he was still in like the Middle East. He's from Palestine. Obviously, most of his content is Middle Eastern. And I'm thinking, gee, too bad he's not in America. Stuff like that doesn't happen. No, he's in America, in Canada. And apparently people are stalking to him, to his house. And the sad thing is, I'm like, it's probably the FBI. He's posting things from Palestine. He's posting images of, you know, Tel Aviv getting hit with rockets. And we know that, and at least the rumors are, that the FBI is apparently knocking on doors of people that are against the Iran war. That's at least the rumors we are hearing. It's just a kind of scary situation when you can have death threats, mysterious people showing up at your home because of what you're posting online, and then knowing if you go to the authorities, they might be on the side of the doxers. They might be on the side of the people trying to intimidate you. They might be going, well, maybe you shouldn't have posted that. Maybe then they wouldn't be so mad at you. It's just a very kind of terrifying situation. And I hope he's all right. I hope, maybe the whole thing's fake and I'll be made a fool of. That would be a good outcome to this. But it's very infuriating that as Americans, we even have to worry about this type of stuff, as we all should and do, because we're dealing with extremists at the highest levels of our government. It's very dangerous situation to be in, but we'll move on regardless. We will trudge forward against all odds, because what are we going to do? Lie? What are we going to do? Not tell the truth about what's going on? Ridiculous. So we will take the risks, and I just hope in some way using my platform to draw awareness to this helps defeat the people trying to silence us, all of us together. I want to go now to a video, because this is very much in line with what the previous caller was saying. And I just want you to understand, and we don't have to play the video because it's, you know, everybody knows it and we've seen it enough, but, and actually goes, it actually, I could take this all the way back to the 80s, but let's just start with 2001. Starting in 2001, I don't need to play the video, but everybody knows the video of General Wesley Clark, saying in 2001 they had a plan for 7 countries in 5 years, Lebanon, Syria, Libya, Iraq, check, 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 finishing off with Iran. Okay, so 2001, that's what the war aims are. That's what everything is being, you know, decided on. They don't quite, you know, get all the way. They run into some trouble. Actually, I think the whole thing kind of runs into a roadblock when in 2006 they tried to invade Lebanon, check that off the list, and what do you know, Hezbollah puts a stop to it, and they have to reorganize and reform. But it's not like they stopped. For the entirety of the George W. Bush campaign, they obviously were extremely successful in getting us to wage senseless war against their enemies. And then Obama swooped into town, and Obama was apparently treated to exactly the same types of pressure that the Bush administration was treated to. In fact, this is a video of Secretary of State Anthony Blinken describing one of the methods that the Israelis tried to use to pressure the Obama administration, or rather, this must have been the Biden administration. You know, I'm I'm getting mixed. I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll go to the Anthony Blinken in just a second, but just to lay out the timeline. Bush, obviously, massive pressure. We have to get to Iran, seven countries in 5 years. Then Obama comes into power, and you have things like this. When Obama took office, many allies feared that his offers of engagement would make him appear weak to the Iranians, but the cables show how Mr. Obama's aides quickly countered those worries by rolling out a plan to encircle Iran with economic sanctions, et cetera, et cetera. They believed, in essence, the administration expected its outreach to fail, but believed that it had to make a bona fide attempt in order to build support for tougher measures, right? So reaching out diplomatically, but knowing that it might not succeed, but that's okay because you really want to get to the military, you know, side of things, but you gotta do the performative sort of diplomatic, you know, the mummers show before anything. These measures included an array of sanctions considerably harsher than any before attempted. By the time of the so-called Arab Spring in 2011, the Obama administration's obsession with regime change in Iran was made explicit. David Sanger of the New York Times noted in April 2011 that, quote, containing Iran's power remains their central goal in the Middle East, and that, quote, every decision from Libya to Yemen to Behran to Syria is being examined under the prism of how to slow Iran's nuclear progress and speed the arrival of opportunities for a successful uprising there, emphasis added. Promoting regime change in Syria played a key role in such calculations because, quote, as some in Mr. Obama's war council have noted, if protesters succeed in Syria, Iran could be next, emphasis added. Sanger notes further that the NATO bombing of Libya was undertaken as a way to send a threatening message to Iran and illustrate U.S. military capabilities to Iranian planners. Okay, so you've got the Bush years. Obviously, massive influence, Iraq war, Afghanistan war, total chaos. Then you have the Obama years with the Arab Spring and the attempted war on Syria and the overthrow of Gaddafi and the murder of him by his own people in the streets. All of these things, admittedly, predicated on strategically weakening Iran and trying to eventually get to that ultimate goal of destroying Iran once and for all. Then you have the second Trump administration. They, of course, you know, willing collaborators with Israel, getting rid of the Iran sanctions, doing a ton of you know, giving them the Golan Heights and so many other things that, you know, allowed them to continue their ultimate drive, their decades-long psychotic impulse to destroy Iran at all costs by pressuring America into it continuously. Then you get to Biden. Here's Anthony Blinken describing one of the pressures that Israel used to try to get the Biden administration into conflict with Iran directly. Let's watch.
Look, you know, this has been a long story when it comes to Iran. And back during the Obama administration, the Israelis were pushing President Obama to take military action against Iran, and were warning that they would do it themselves if he didn't. And he wouldn't, because he thought the better way to get at the nuclear program, which is what we were focused on, was through very muscular diplomacy backed up by very, very strong sanctions that we rallied the world to put in place. And then we got the Iran nuclear agreement.
So did you hear that? Israel tried to pressure Obama into attacking Iran by claiming they would attack Iran if he didn't. It sounds like Obama called their bluff and Trump folded, is what it sounds like. It sounds like they used exactly the same strategy that they used successfully against Trump. Hey, you do it or we're going to do it. Trump said okay and did it. Sounds like Obama actually stood his ground, called their bluff, and didn't fall for the intimidation. Isn't that interesting? So again, the war aims of Iran. Oh, we have to free them. This is for the Iranian people. Actually, it's because of this. Actually, it's their ballistic missiles. Just don't even argue with it. Just understand. Just be above it all. Just understand that from way before the Bush administration, but at the very least, we have very well-established, publicly acknowledged patterns where Israel tries desperately through hook and crook, through intimidation, blackmail, deception, feeding people false information. I mean, where do you think the weapons of mass destruction lie came from in the first place? Time and time again, from Bush to Obama to Trump to Biden to Obama, every time you have Iranian warmongers in their ear desperately pushing them, attack Iran, do all of this other stuff to get ready to attack Iran. And it seems like Trump, against all odds, was the one American president weak enough to fall for it, spineless enough to let himself be pushed around, and stupid enough to believe their lies. It's unfortunate, but I think the only solution to this is, as I've been advocating for forever, but now is even more, you know, intense, this desire, we have to thoroughly, in a complete and holistic way, eradicate Israeli influence from the American government once and for all, by root and branch, immediately. With that, we got to the calls. We've got Josh in Florida, who I understand disagrees with me, I suppose. Go ahead, Josh. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Harrison? It's not really a disagreement with you personally. I've been a listener, a supporter. You had Methylene Blue. It was amazing. Been listening to Alex since that David Gergen interview. I think it was Martial Law 911. Called in a lot, but my disagreement is more of, I think the, when you guys spend a year, you know, saying how brown people, Muslims are bad, and then our Pete Hegseth with the Crusader Cross, and then you sell Crusader type items. I mean, look what's happening. It's like we're going into Constantinople again. And I happen to have a unique view, my mom being Irish English, my dad from Pakistan. I grew up with a Bible and a Quran next to me. I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Christ, but Muslims and Christians have a lot more in common than Jews and Christians, especially when you read, you know, their version of Revelation, where the Mahdi gathers all the followers, and him and Isa, which is Jesus, they team up to battle the Dajjal. Christians and Muslims don't allow usury. But I think it's just weird when our Department of War, you know, Pete Hegseth, he has a Crusader cross tattooed on him, and then you're selling Crusader products, like, out of nowhere. So I think you got to just be careful how we label things.
And, yeah, I get what you're saying. And look, even the Crusades themselves are a gray area for me. I know, you know, it's common now to say the Crusades are a good thing. And I think they were. I mean, they were a defensive act, right? Those lands were Christian until the Muslims invaded, and they pushed into, you know, Europe for 500 years till Europe finally responded and you know, clapped back against the – so, you know, I'm not – sitting up here going, the Crusades were colonialism, white people bad, obviously. I think the Crusades as a symbol are like a good thing. However, you get into the actual details, and like the Byzantines were Orthodox Christian. They actually asked the Catholics to come help, and the Catholics just showed up and sacked the city and like stole a bunch of stuff and totally, like, really at the end of the day, the Byzantine Empire might have survived if the Catholics hadn't stabbed him in the back. So, like, you know, the whole thing is nuanced. I wasn't in favor of the sacking of Constantinople by the, you know, forces of, I think it was the fourth crusade. You know, this stuff is historical and nuanced, and you can take different views of it. At the end of the day, it's about asserting the Christian character of our country and the mission we have as Christians to spread our faith and protect our co-religionists. You know, you don't have to take it so literally, although I think Christians should rule the Middle East. What are we going to do? Mess it up? What would happen if you gave, you know, Israel over to the Christians? Are we going to be worse than the Jews? I doubt it. I doubt that'll happen. And, you know, one of the reasons I brought up what was happening to Junior, the account that I, you know, just talked about running away, I messaged him, or I just, you know, retweeted his thing, and he himself responded like, I'm blown away by the support I have from Christians. Like, he expects Christians to not like him because he's Muslim. It's like, dude, you're telling the truth. You're speaking out against tyranny. You're, you know, supporting what's right. Like, well, you know, why wouldn't we support you? So, I mean, we got to break out of this paradigm. It's not Muslims or Jews. These are not the two options to choose. There is that third. It is Christianity. It doesn't mean that we then support, like, you know, bombing the hell out of Iran just because they happen to be Muslim. Like, that's absurd. And of course, the idea that this is, I mean, obviously we are I'm personally deeply against and highly offended by the fact that they're predicating this war on bringing about the apocalypse and fulfillment of their particular highly dubious interpretation of the Book of Revelation. I mean, that's ridiculous, and America should not be involved in that in the slightest. However, I think probably if you want to go to the root of the problem in America overall, everything is the lack of strong Christianity, is the Christian nature, Christian character of our country being slowly but surely degraded and basically eradicated by this point. I do think we need to be, in a symbolic way, crusaders of the faith. We do need to be taking on the very real enemies of Christ on earth, and not just treat church as like, you know, stories that only have relevance 1,000 years ago that, you know, sound nice. No, we're in a very real battle right now, and it's a battle that has to be fought intelligently. Does that make sense, Josh? Like, you know, we sell the Crusader gear, and I even said when we first started selling the Crusader gear, it's like you can't, unless it's just a simple, like, one line, another line cross, any other cross you use, people will accuse you of having, like, secret, you know, alliances, or, like, that's a Crusader cross. Don't you know that that's, you know, the Masonic, the Knights Templar? And it's like, whatever. It's a cool-looking cross. It looks cool. It is cool. It's a cool historical moment. And it's a reminder that Christianity is actually the aggrieved party here, and that all of the Middle East used to be Christian, all of it. The Desvolt, no retreat, no surrender sweater. It's probably the coolest hoodie we have, actually. It's this awesome red color. I wear mine around rather often, and it's got that very cool Crusader cross. Does that make sense, Josh, why the iconography, I think, is not at odds with, you know, actually loving everybody, loving Muslims, Jews just as much as Christians, but also understanding we are Christians and we have a responsibility to fight for our faith. Does that make sense?
Hey, it makes sense. And I'm a Ron Paul Republican. Ron Paul says the reason why they hate us is because of blowback. It's because we've been there for a long time. There was a 600-year period in Israel under Persian Muslim rule, when they also were in Spain, where it was all peace. The Crusades were mainly done out of England becoming unified and the Viking raid stopping, and knights having nothing to do.
There was an aspect of that. No, it's a super interesting, you know, historical situation, and I think it has. I mean, you know, the other thing is that, like, I think I said yesterday, like, I would have a very different view of the war in Iran if I just thought this was strictly like America doing America things, or Christians just being like, we have to fight for Christianity. It's the fact that it's not. And if that was our motivation, we never would have gone to war with Iran. So it doesn't even make sense really at the end of the day. But it's like, they might dress this up as a Christian mission, but it's just not. They might want to portray this as a crusade, but like, there are no crusades with Jewish people in the Middle Ages, right? Quite the opposite of that. So again, don't let the iconography, you know, scare you away from understanding this stuff. It's however you choose to employ it, and we choose to employ Christianity as not just the foundations of our beliefs, but also something that the decline of has led to a lot of disastrous things, right? The understanding that because we're not Christian, because our Christian character in America has been degraded and we've allowed it to be degraded, that in and of itself has led to so much of the other chaos and misery that we witness on a daily basis. Let's go to Jeff Smith in Pennsylvania now. Thank you so much for the call. I do appreciate it, Josh. Jeff Smith in Pennsylvania, line 7. Go ahead.
Hey, Harrison. Love your stuff. And love the products. I've been listening to you guys for about 5 years now, and I'm one of the 80-year-old boomers that don't think like boomers.
Good.
I'm trying not. I tried for a long time to figure out why things were going the way they were, and I've just lost all reason as to why they're going the way they are. So.
Right.
We'll have to wait and see, I guess. But I had two things I wanted to ask you. One is a question. and I don't want the answer to shorten up my time to discuss the other thing. I just wanted to know, and if it's an issue, just tell me. It's none of my business. But whatever happened to Chase Geyser? The first question.
Well, I can answer that. I can answer that very, very quickly. Chase went to work at Bigley. He moved to Arkansas and has since stopped working with them and is doing his own thing in Nashville now. We love Chase. It's just, you know, he moved on and went on to do bigger and better things. So we still love Chase, and he still is doing, I think he's doing something for censored.tv now. But yeah, he moved up to do our operations behind the scenes in Arkansas, and then since then moved on to Nashville and is doing his own thing now and setting up a podcast studio and killing it. So, we love Chase, but that's why he's not around here anymore. He doesn't live in Austin, but we'd love for him to come back occasionally, and we'll have him on whenever he does. So that answers that question. What's your next one?
The other one is I came across, and this, I told the screener, this has to do with the Iran-Israel war, but more has to do with Israel and the Jewish situation. And that is that I came across a podcast by a fellow by the name of Tudor Alexander. The name of the podcast is called The Dance of Life. I've never known whether you ever heard of him. There's hundreds of thousands of podcasters out there. This was done over 2 years ago. It has one, and it showed had 1.6 million views, so it's not a small thing. But the title of the podcast is Why the Jews Are Not God's Chosen People, and it's dated 2024. Now, I can't get into the whole thing because it's an hour and almost an hour and a half long. But I am not anywhere near being a scholar of this. I just look at things and listen to things, and there's no way that I can tell whether this is true or not. It seems like when I listen to it, he's got a lot of backup, a lot of information that seems to be true, but I wanted to see if during your air quotes free time, you could check this out and see if there's any, because I'll tell you what, there's things on this podcast that absolutely just floored me.
Wow.
About the Jews, about the Jewish people, about some of the world leaders in the past that were not Jews, that were Jews that I never knew, like maybe Stalin and Trotsky and Lenin and, you know, on and on and on. Just stuff that came out of the blue that I just was like, what? Are you kidding me?
And you know, it's tough because then you feel the need to go. You're like, I would have heard of this. You got to go back and fact check everything. I'll check it out. Thank you for the suggestion. And look, it's an important question right now because a lot of geopolitical activity is predicated on this assertion that the Jews are the chosen people. Therefore, they have a right to Israel. I mean, it's not purely a question of religion or, you know, theocratic, you know, interpretation. It's like this has real tangible effects on the world, so it's worth investigating and finding out. So I will check that out. Thank you. There's a couple people that do really good work in that regard that we're going to try to have on. One that I have often suggested, his name is Ash Maize, M-A-I-Z. Look him up on YouTube. He's a former Orthodox Jew that just dismantles the arguments in a really respectful and impactful way. Thank you for being with us, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for Team Humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site,
You become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexandstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexandstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide, 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at TheAlexandStore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.